Welcome to a special session of the Fish and Game Commission. My name is Michael Flores. I'm currently serving as president. To my right is Mike Christman, commissioner from Visalia. And then to my far right is Mr. Jim Kellogg, commissioner from, I always get this wrong. Concord, representing the fair city of Concord. And to my left is Bob Traynor, executive director of the Fish and Game Commission. Further down is John Duffy, assistant executive director of the commission, Sandy Daniel, Mr. Cunningham, our counsel. Also on the dais is Mr. Boydston, LB, welcome. Chief deputy director, Dirk Brazil, and deputy director, Sankey Mastra. So welcome, everyone. So let's get right to work. Bob.
Thank you, Mr. President. The first item is consideration of emergency action to amend Section 150.16, Title 14, California Code of Regulations regarding trip limits for Cabazon, Greenling, and California Sheephead. Just briefly, the Commission was scheduled to consider this item at its December 6th meeting in Monterey. However, we did not have a quorum, therefore the need for this special hearing today. The Commission subcommittee of Commissioners Shookit and Kellogg received the Department's request on this item, closed public testimony, and as a subcommittee recommended approval of the item. Mr. Fred Wendell is here from the Department's Marine Region. If there's any questions that the Commission has of the Department regarding the proposal. If not, the proposal is part of your analysis and summary. We did receive an email from Maritech yesterday, which is part of your handout material today regarding traps and on this issue. But as I indicated, Mr. Wendell is available for questions if need be.
I don't have any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else?
No.
Okay. No questions.
Okay.
Then I'll move that we adopt the trip limits as indicated in item number one.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Item 2 is consideration of adoption of proposed changes to Section 708 of Title 14, California Code of Regulations regarding tag draw system. Again, this item was originally scheduled for adoption at the Commission's December 6th meeting in Monterey. The Department at that time made a presentation. Again, the subcommittee received the Department's presentation, public comments, and then closed the public comments and made a recommendation to approve the Department's proposed regulation changes. And Deputy Director Zonke Mastrup is available to respond to any questions.
You know I'm going to have questions. So it's 75-25 on the big game?
Yes, correct. Okay. For antelope, elk, and bighorn sheep.
Okay. And then the deer is 90-10?
Yes.
Okay. And that's it?
Zonke, describe how this will work without a extensive database we're hoping to put together with the new system, new computer system that we were talking about. Talk about how this draw is going to work.
Yeah, basically, last season you adopted the points. So every time a person applies for their first choice and they don't get drawn, they get one of these preference points.
Right, right.
This coming year, if you adopt these regulations, the programmers at our licensed revenue branch query everybody who applies. We have a database already for those with points. And it then sorts by points, goes through the drawing, issues tags. If we run out in that category, anybody who failed to get their first choice gets another point. So some people will come out of the system with two. Then it goes, everybody who didn't get drawn gets thrown into the second round, the draw by choice. We call it the consolation round. And everybody who didn't get a tag has a chance of picking up one there. But there are no points awarded in that consolation round, only in the point draw. And so that just goes that way year after year.
Good. So, good. All right, give us a scenario if somebody has 6 points and they're not drawn.
So I apply for X5B. I had 6 points. There were 100 tags. There were 101 applicants who had 6 points also, though. I'm the unlucky one. I'm the 101th applicant in the random. I get a 7th point. Next year, I'm guaranteed a tag because I'm going to be the only one with seven points.
Okay, so it's not a random assignment. It's not like you get two numbers in the drawing.
No, because it randomly, you get a random number, but it's sorted by points randomly. Then it goes to the next number of points.
So you'll take the pool of the one-pointers, the two-pointers.
Yeah, we start with the highest group of points and deal with them first, and then the next highest points. The idea is to give the ones with the who've waited the longest first crack at the tags.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioners, any other questions?
Nope.
The only one I would have it.
Hit your mic. Mic.
Oh. Zonk is if you put in for, say, a special deer hunt and you don't get drawn, and the next year you put in for a special deer hunt again, but it's a different zone. The points,
transferable.
We just specifically at some of your request, the points are transferable between hunts, but not between species. In other words, you can't use a bighorn sheep tag on deer, but that deer point can be used on any hunt you want.
Right. Okay. Good.
Thank you.
Good. Well, this is quite frankly has been a long time coming. I'm glad we're there. It's a lot of good hard work on your part, Zonkey, and other people's work in the department, a lot of work on the part of the stakeholders out there with the workshops held. So it's a pleasure that I move that we adopt this tag draw system here in California.
Second.
I echo Michael's comments as well. Long time coming, so looking forward to it.
Yep.
Now maybe I might draw. all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Rio. Thank you.
Item 3 is consideration of adoption of proposed changes to Section 230, Title 14, California Code of Regulations regarding the issuance of permits for contest offering prizes for the taking of game fish. Again, the item was scheduled for consideration at your at your December 6th meeting in Monterey. The Commission's committee received public testimony on this item, closed public testimony at the end, and made a recommendation as a committee to adopt the department's proposed changes. In addition, Commissioner Kellogg requested that we also reopen this section for future consideration of limiting the number of bass tournaments in the Delta. The subcommittee also recommended that the commission authorize staff to publish notice of that proposed change.
No
problem. I don't see anybody from the department. Zonkey can, or I could try to answer questions.
Any questions?
I don't.
I just want to clarify that my intent is to be able to hear from the public and have the other commissioners hear what some of the concerns are about the bass tournaments in the Delta. So,
we'll schedule that for down the road
then. Right. That the first hearing would be scheduled for your February meeting here in Sacramento.
Oh, okay. Great.
And commissioners, we'll be prepared with some options based on your comments at the Monterey meeting, Mr. Kellogg.
Okay. Thank you.
Need a motion? Have a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Item 4 is request of George Walters of Kirkland, Washington, requesting renewal of an experimental gear permit to take deep water tanner crabs. This item was scheduled for consideration at the Commission's December 6th meeting in Monterey. At that time, the department recommended denial of the request, and it's my understanding that some of the information regarding renewal of the permits was inaccurate, and I believe from the department, Christine Barsky is here to clarify that. Also, Mr. Walters is also present, would like to make a presentation to the full commission regarding his request.
Go ahead.
Mr. George Walters, who is here, has requested renewal. Well, actually, he's requested extension of an experimental gear permit to use traps up in Northern California outside of 200 fathoms to harvest tanner and deep water crabs. Currently, what happened was initially he came to the department in the year 2000 and requested an experimental gear permit. We spent, department staff spent time investigating that, and we came up with a set of conditions, and we went before the commission, and you approved that experimental gear permit. He never used that experimental gear permit. Then he came back again the following year and asked to renew it and include other deep water crabs along with the tanner crabs. And we granted that again. That current permit expires on March 28th. And what Mr. Walters has said is that he needs an extension on or a renewal of that permit in March because he won't be able to come down until March. We're still recommending that against this, mainly because with the establishment of the California Rockfish Conservation Area, from Point Reyes North, it's going to be 20 fathoms out to 250 fathoms. We're going to be displacing fishermen out into that area outside of 250 fathoms. So we have concerns about him working gear in an area where other fisheries may be all of a sudden active. We also want the commission to understand that although we'd like to see development of new fisheries, it involves biologists' time to develop a sampling program and to analyze the data at the end. A provision of his permit is to have an observer aboard, but the department would still have to provide a sampling protocol for that observer and then analyze the data for future requests or other fishermen that would make that request. And that's all I have to say.
Go ahead.
Mr. Walters.
Hi. On the original permit that they issued us, we would stick by those guidelines, which would we would be fishing outside of 300 fathoms to begin with. 300 to 600 is our permit. I hope you guys all have this letter that we sent down, kind of basically explains our request for this, and I just flew down to see if you had any questions about it. And also another option that came to my attention is I realize there's a budget problem with fishing game and nothing's settled out or anything, but if there's any way we could hire an analyzing firm to help offset the cost of fishing game and the manpower, you know, we'd be willing to do that just to see this thing through. The reason we haven't come down beforehand is just it's a market thing. Just, you know, we work on these markets and we say have people tell us that, you know, yeah, we'll buy the crab. And then when it comes down to the deadline, it's just they don't want it anymore. We have to compete with Russian crab, Dungeness, and Canadian crab. So it's just we finally think we have something solid here. So we'd like to come down and give it a try, and we just ask for an extension to see if we can make this a viable fishery.
Thank you, Mr. Walters.
Thank you. What's the fisheries that you mentioned the fact that there's other fisheries potentially that are going to be starting out in the area that his experimental gear may either jeopardize or interfere with.
Well, all the trawl fishing, all the...
Need to get it.
Yes.
All the trawl fisheries are being forced out into deep water, and he's fishing traps on long lines. We've always had potential problems with traps and trawl nets. So.
Well, are we talking about, you know, condensed area where they're all going to be concentrating just in one area? I mean, what, 250 fathoms is what, a mile to 2 miles offshore? And he's talking about going 300 fathoms. That's even probably further
out. We were
out.
Thinking more of the deep water trawl fishery for flatfish.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out, I don't know how extensive his traps are and stuff like that, so...
Is the issue really conflict, or is the issue not having enough staff time to put the fisheries together to monitor it properly? What's the real issue here?
The primary issue is staffing time.
Okay.
And it's probably important to note in Alaska, when they have these fisheries for tanner crab and deep water crabs, they have an observer aboard at all times. Mr. Walters did commit to having an observer aboard the first month he operated and then 1 week of every month that he operated. But
what if he agreed to have an observer on all the time?
Well, again, you still have the problem of evaluating the fishery, evaluating the results, and designing a program that's statistically valid to, you know, make an intelligent decision when he comes back or when other vessels come back and say, we'd like to participate in this fishery.
Okay.
Essentially, we've had problems in California of having fisheries develop before we have any rules in place.
No, you're right.
And consequently, we're concerned. In the northern states, Alaska, Oregon, Washington, not Oregon, but Alaska, they've had problems with declines in deep water crabs. So we're concerned. We have no experience with this fishery, and we're short people who could evaluate it.
Under the current budget constraints, If we asked you right now to start putting one together, how long would it take to do? I mean, it's a matter of priorities, I know, but would it be something that would take a long time? I mean, I just need some help here understanding what's involved.
Essentially, you need to meet with a statistician, decide how many, you know, samples valid, and just take a look at the data. It would have to be key punched, entered.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just who's going to do that? I've got a list of responsibilities right now. Patty may be able to tell you better who could or would be able to do that sort of thing.
Okay.
All right. You know, it's interesting because I really think that, you know, we're clamoring for data and information, and this is one way to provide that. I mean, so... Sure, come up to the mic, please.
On our permit, our experimental gear permit that we were issued, the fathoms or the outline is the depths are from 300 to 600. In my experience of fishing down here in the past, we usually find most of the crab between 500 and 600, but we just didn't want to limit ourselves. But, I mean, I'd be willing to stay between 400 fathoms and down if it's going to be any kind of a gear conflict. I would definitely be willing to do that. Just sometimes we've seen them crab up as far as 350. I've never gone above that. But, you know, in our experience, that we have seen them that shallow. But for the most part, when I was down here in 97, it was all 550, 500, 600 fathoms. And also as far as data collecting, I think the main concern for fishing game is the bycatch, what we're catching in those pots. And that's why they agreed to say, you know, that we only had one, had to have an observer on a month to begin with, and then once a month every, you know, until we were over done fishing. But, you know, they're just looking for bycatch, and we feel it's a very clean fishery. We don't catch anything else, but basically some kuzai, tannerite crab, maybe a black cod here and there, and that's it.
Do you have you fish up in Alaska? You fish off the Alaskan waters. Do you have observers on your boat full time up there?
On some fisheries, yes.
And it's your contention that in this instance, given the species you're fishing for, You don't need a
I committed to having an observer on board because Fishing Game does want some data on what we're catching out there, because it's a new fisheries, and I understand that, and that's fine with me. And we've already contacted, you know, a couple of observer firms that would be willing to send a man down for us. But up there, we have a, what's called a brown crab, deep water brown crab fishery, and we have to have one all the time. But if we go fish king crab or Apelio, we don't have to have one.
Oh, okay.
It's just a certain kind of fisheries. They want the data. Because it's a newer fishery. They don't have, they can't go out and trawl for species and see what, you know, get counts of how many crab or whatever, you know. They just want the data from the observers on board.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay.
You know that the last king crab season was only 2 days this
year. Yeah, I know. I know. Quite frankly, I really understand the budget problems we're under today, but I also I'm going to speak for myself and urge other commissioners to join in here. But the whole idea of an experimental gear permit is to help develop a fisheries. I understand the budget constraints. We have a fisherman here that's asking for this permit, that's agreed to have a observer on board that he pays for. I would really like to urge us to grant him this experimental gear permit. You need to work with us a little bit on this. I mean, if we're successful in this motion, I think it's important. You need to understand, I mean, we're really pushed, and going to be more so this next year. But I'd like to urge that we grant this permit. So,
no, go ahead.
Okay.
We're in discussion.
I just kind of echo Mike's feelings a little bit. I think that with everything that we have and science and everything else, there's nothing that gives us as good a information as the actual fishermen trying out the product themselves. And I think that the data we would eventually gather from this experimental gear is going to be helpful for us deciding on that fishery in the future. And if we shut them down, we're not going to know what what that's going to provide. So I'm in favor of granting that too.
You want to move it?
Patty had a question. LB?
Go ahead, LB.
Before you make a motion, I
need to push your button.
Suggest before you make a motion that Patty and I have conferred, and we have one possible addition to your thinking.
It's what we wanted to hear.
Okay.
Good.
Well,
thank you, Mr. President, Commissioners. I would make a couple of suggestions. One would be that Mr. Walters does have an observer on board, that it be consistent with the observer criteria and protocol that is being used in the ground fish fishery now, and that he also consider being sponsored, for example, by someone, an academic, someone in academia who could have a, who could do a study, who could provide the analysis and oversight for
how do we make that
for
happen,
the whole
Patty?
Process.
And do we require that of others?
Well, it's one way to get the scientific oversight and involvement, and Mr. Walters had approached me before the meeting asking if there was a way that he could provide, and he actually mentioned it, I think, to you in his presentation, he would be willing to try and provide some sort of oversight and analysis, and that would be one way for him to do that. It might be, in fact, a cost-effective way for him to do that. That would help provide that oversight and make sure that the statistical approaches were good and that it was consistent with the observer program that we're looking to do with groundfish.
You okay with that, Mr. Walters?
Yeah. The NRDC would like to help. Can I say that?
No, don't.
By sponsors, is she mean like universities? talk to universities to have them, like their marine division or something like that? Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with that. I think it's a good idea, actually.
It'll help get the data quicker.
Yeah.
Okay, I would move we grant this experimental gear permit, given the conditions that we've just illuminated here, and we thank you for coming down today.
Okay. I have a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Item number 5 is consideration of adoption of proposed changes to sections 150.06 and 150.16 of Title 14 California Code of Regulations regarding seasonal commercial closures for Cabazon, Greenlane, California Sheephead, and Rockfishes. Again, this item was originally scheduled for consideration at the Commission's December 6th meeting. The Commission subcommittee received public comments on this and closed the public record on this item with a recommendation for approval as proposed by the department. Ms. Marcy Urumko is here with the department to answer any questions that the Commission may have.
Good morning, Marcy.
Good morning.
I have no questions.
Commissioner Kellogg?
None.
All right. Neither do I. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the recommendation of the subcommittee.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you, Marcy.
Thank you.
It's probably the quickest presentation.
Good job, Marcy.
Yeah.
Item 6 is consideration of adoption of proposed changes to sections 150, 150.01, 150.03, and 150.05 of Title 14, California Code of Regulations regarding the Nearshore Fishery Restricted Access Program. Again, this item was scheduled for consideration by the Commission at its December 6th meeting. At that time, the Commission received the Department's preferred alternative on this matter, received public testimony, and also as a subcommittee closed the public comment period on this item with no recommendation to the full commission other than requesting that the department consider all the public comments that have been received and if any changes in their proposed alternative would be made to make that known at the special hearing when it was scheduled. Mr. Fred Wendell is present to, I think, summarize the department's preferred alternative and then answer any questions that the commissioners may have. Commissioners, also in your handout material, have some information that was provided in letters and emails to the Commission office on this matter.
Good morning, President Flores, Commissioners. Fred Wendell speaking for the Department. The Restricted Access Program before you implements a key component of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan. It's been developed over a two-year period, and it's benefited from considerable constituent involvement during nearly 30 meetings. At its heart, the program reduces the size of the nearshore live fish commercial fishing fleet. If adopted, the program results in a fishing capacity that's more in line with resource availability, and it spreads that capacity across the state based on a regional structure that is also a key component of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan. The anticipated benefits of your adopting a restricted access program include improved opportunity for the remaining fishermen to make a living, reduced incentives to fish hard and fast, which leads to an improved sense of stewardship, reduced need for regulations that restrict efficiency, and reduced conflict between recreational and commercial constituencies. The proposed program is individual-based. That is, the permit would be linked to the individual rather than a vessel. There are transferable and non-transferable permits within the program for each region. The regions were created with the adoption of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan. Gear would be restricted to line gear unless a permittee qualifies to use trap gear or trawl gear, And there are, in addition, a number of proposed regulations that guide the administrative processes needed to run the program. And in reviewing public comment, the department is not proposing any changes to its proposed recommendations. Tracy Bishop, who's done a great job of coordinating the development of this program, has already reviewed the department's preferred options with you at the December 20th meeting. She and I are both here today to answer any questions that you might have regarding the program or the implementation options. Thank you.
Thanks, Fred.
Thank you.
The only comments before we hear from other speakers on this is and you alluded to it in your comments, Fred, but this is a culmination, much like the putting together of the Nearshore Fisheries Management Plan, extensive outreach effort, stakeholder involvement from the beginning to the end. It's a start. I think we all recognize it's a start. But in my view, it's something we have to do. Hopefully through this process, as we move through this process, there'll be critical junctures through time that we'll be able to come back and revisit, the restricted access plan, and at points through that process make adjustments as fisheries change over time.
That's correct. A review process is built into the program, and it's clearly an evolving process. This just moves us one step forward into implementation of the Nearshore Plan.
It's the other thing I think we need to build into this process is frequent updates to both the Marine Subcommittee and, of course, to the Commission. I know you know that, but I think constituents and stakeholders need to understand that there's going to be regular updates, regular kind of where are we kind of sessions. That really do point out the fact that this is a dynamic and changing plan over time.
Yes, that's clearly a way to cleanly go about an adaptive process.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
Mr. Weber. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Mike Weber, Marine Advisor to the Commission. President Flores, Commissioners, I'd like to run through some observations about the Nearshore Restricted Access Program that I hope will help you in your decision this morning. The main aim of this program, as Fred mentioned, is to bring the commercial fleet into better balance with the available fish. And in doing so, we will be reducing the pressure on fish populations. We will also, I believe, be reducing conflicts with recreational fishermen. And I think we will also be giving remaining fishermen a decent chance of making a decent living in this fishery. The program was developed, as Fred mentioned, with a lot of constituent involvement, but in all of that, one key concern was consistency with the Commission's policy on restricted access, and this program is fully consistent with that. The principal challenge was that we're facing, and we've been facing for quite some time, is reversing the explosive growth in the commercial fishery that occurred during the 1990s. And if you may recall, in 1999, when the legislature first required a nearshore fishery permit, 1,100 permits were issued, and that was well above what the fishery could sustain. As a result of previous actions by the Commission, that number is now down to 505 permittees. Still, if you take the average annual landings of those permittees during the period 1994 to 1999, their average landings are 4 to 5 times what is available at this time as a result of actions that have been taken to reduce overall commercial limits. About the only way to address this unsustainable situation is by reducing the number of permittees. And the principal means for doing so is a set of qualifying criteria. And these sets of criteria were developed and tailored to each of the regions. These criteria reflect the views of many of the fishermen that we met with, and I think many of those who met with us and with the department will recognize their ideas. And the principal aim was to end up with a fleet of full and part-time fishermen who have regularly participated in the fishery since 1994 at more than token levels. Now, the criteria are not especially demanding. At the most, fishermen would have to have had 500 pounds of landings in each of 3 years during 1994 to 1999 with an average price of $2 a pound. Now, to put that in perspective, that means that a fisherman who would so qualify would have made $1,000 from this fishery in each of those years. The criteria provide room for both full-time and part-time fishermen, fishermen who depend entirely on the fishery, and those who depend on this fishery as a mix of several. The program also divides the state into four regions, and this recognizes the enormous regional differences in this fishery. And those are really critical to keep in mind because there's an enormous difference, say, for instance, between the fishery in the Morro Bay area, which accounts for maybe 30% of the statewide catch, and the fisheries in the north region. The fishery in Morro Bay developed in the late 80s, early 90s. These are very experienced fishermen. The conditions are very different there, whereas the fishery in the north didn't develop until really 1997, and they're lucky to get maybe 100 days fishing out of there. Without regionalization of the program, it's likely that as fisheries close in the south, and they would close early, fishermen in the south would move to the north where there were still available fish. Now, there's one other matter that I wanted to address, and it's become a matter of a considerable amount of debate, and that is the matter of fees. The department has recommended $500. There was a range of fees from the current $125 up to, or $250 up to $1,200. Now, I've looked into the matter of fees and what is statewide policy on this, and there really is no stated statewide policy. There are passages in the code that talk about fees, but I would say that those passages end up in a muddle at best. There hasn't been a clear statewide policy on this. So what the alternative is to look at what the policy has been as a matter of practice. And in the few fisheries that we were able to look at in the last week, as a matter of practice, both fees adopted by the legislature and fees adopted by the commission make up no more than 5% of total management costs. When the legislature originally set the fee for the commercial permit in the nearshore fishery, they set it at $125. And those 1,100 permits still made up just a small fraction of the management costs. And if you look at it another way, how much of a bite comes out of a fisherman's revenues as a result of these fees? So far as we can tell, these fees account for 1 to 5% of what fishermen are paid at the dock for their fish. Now, I think everyone recognizes that there's a need for participants in the fisheries to bear their fair share of management costs. But as I said, there doesn't seem to be any clear policy on this. And one of the things I hope to do over the next year is to really look at what the practice is comprehensively in California, and also look at what the practice is in other states and other entities and find out how they fund their management and how they deal with some of the problems that you're confronting. I wanted to emphasize that how carefully and deliberately the department has developed this program. And I think it is an example of what was intended originally by the Marine Life Management Act. There were a lot of meetings with fishermen up and down the state, and everyone had an opportunity to participate. I think that one last point. The proposed program will reduce the number of permittees from 505 to 175. As I mentioned before, I don't believe that any of those who will not be eligible for permits in 2003 under the proposed program can claim to have had a significant stake in this fishery. The more people we leave in the fishery, the worse off those who have committed themselves to this fishery over many years will be in trying to make a living at it. In addition, the more permittees there are in the fishery, the more intrusive regulations are going to have to be as the commission tries to control a fishery where there are too many fishermen chasing too few fish. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And
Mike, I'm interested as I think about the implementation of this restricted access program. I'm interested in knowing kind of what your views of what the, in a macro sense, what the fishery is going to look like up and down the coast. I mean, we've set four regions in place, and as you just indicated, certain limits to the number of permits. You look at the major ports now, you look at the fishermen in the major ports, you look at the species they're taking. How, generally speaking, what's it going to look like on the water?
Well, what I anticipate is that, first of all, there will be longer seasons compared to the last couple of years. And there will be less of an impetus to race for the fish a capacity to spread out the fishing. I should say this is really just, you know, it's another step towards making this more of a sustainable fishery in the sense that it'll be a fishery that where fishermen can make a decent living and do it at a pace that makes some sense. I also think because of the regionalization, you will see a more equitable distribution of available fish up and down the state. Because as I mentioned, really the major regions are by far are the South Central region and the Southern region. And so there's a real legitimate concern, I think, up in areas, ports like Fort Bragg, of being moved out of the fishery. I think once what we need to do is in a year's time, really assess what the performance has been. There are other actions that the department will be proposing to bring the fishery into management. But I expect we're hearing from some fishermen coming up with ideas for how to make some alterations that would suit their regions, perhaps. But that is a whole set of questions or issues that I think requires more discussion. I mean, it's really, you find as soon as somebody brings up an idea that sounds great and you go out and you talk with other folks, you find out that life sometimes is a little more complex.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike.
You're welcome.
Not yet. I'll hear some more. There's a public comment.
It's closed.
Do you want to take it?
This one?
Yeah. Okay.
Do we have any people
in the room? We have two.
Two.
But there may be more once we open.
This ain't closed, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Just give us a moment. Okay. All right. We've decided we're going to open this up for any public comment. We have a few people who've registered.
We have two cards. First speaker will be Randy Fry, followed by Paul Weakland.
Jim, this is going to be summer reruns from Monterey. That was a practice speech.
That's good, Randy, because that's why we did this, so you could let the other commissioner hear what you had to say.
And I appreciate it. Okay. In 1990, the Little Hoover Commission wrote within the California state government an oft-repeated charge concerning the Department of Fish and Game's internal administrative capacity is the seeming inability of the department to provide timely, comprehensive, and well-founded fiscal and program information, whether requested by the state control agencies such as the Legislative Analysis or Department of Finance or by the public, the DFG, it is claimed, has been unable to provide anything more than rudimentary budget allocation and expenditure information. With your adoption of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan, you now have the responsibility of setting the cost of commercial nearshore fishing permits. The Recreational Fishing Alliance is concerned that the Department of Fish and Game's proposed new commercial nearshore permit price of $500 does not come close to meeting the straight face test, much less the actual cost associated with the commercial nearshore fishery. The $500 figure has been pulled out of the sky, an arbitrary number based not upon any cost analysis, but based on a comfort level. The 174 restricted access permits at $500 equals $87,000 a year. Add to that the commercial landing tax of 0.0013 cents per pound, and based on the permittees catching their total allocation, it equals $3.22 apiece per year. The postage is more than the tax. The 174 permittees will pay a combined total of $561. The department's economist has come up with a $1,500 a year permit. Terry Tillman, I've spoke to him last week. Based on the department's figures and the Department of Fish and Game Code, our figure is in the $11,000 range. The baseline cost for the management of the nearshore finfish fishery before the adoption of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan ran $3.7 million for management, enforcement, and research. The Nearshore Fishery Management Plan calls for an additional $3.7 million for expenses relating to the administering of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan. Thus, the total cost associated with implementation of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan the total cost associated with implementation of the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan minus the MPA component. So if you look at the 2003 allocation, and this is total Cabazon, Greenling, Sheepshead, Scorpionfish, and the nearshore rockfish species, the commercials are getting 202.6 metric tons, which equals 25% of the total allocation. The recreationals, 602.7 metric tons, 75%. And this is, LB, this is taking into consideration the Cabazon, and if you crunch the numbers, it's actually a 75-25% ratio. If you take 25% of the 7.7 million needed for the Nearshore Fishery Management Plan, you're looking at $11,219 per permit if the commercial sector, the live fishermen, paid their actual costs associated with the fishery. I'm going to skip through this. You guys already know the law, 85, 87, 89.7, yada, yada, yada. And Joe, I'm going to read your quote again. I like it. This is a quote that Joe Milton, the department's counsel, made. It was regarding another issue, but we feel it's still consistent with this issue. Consistent with the distinctions in Section 711B, funding of commercial fishing programs, and Section 711, funding of sport fishing programs, Section 85.5 recognizes that the recreational fishing generates funds pursuant to the Federal Aid in Sports Fishing Restoration Act with revenues used for management of nearshore fish, while Section 85.86.1 identifies funding from commercial nearshore permits and other appropriate funds to pay the cost of nearshore fishery management. Nothing in the statute indicates that one sector should or will fund the entire nearshore fishery management program. However, pursuant to Section 710.7b, the legislature intended that a portion of the marine resource protection costs be apportioned to those who use and benefit from the marine fishery management. Thus, recreational and commercial sectors should reasonably be expected to fund a proportion of the nearshore fishery management cost that is consistent with their allocation.
Thank you.
Randy, what do you think the fee should be? You think we should assess a fee of $11,000 per fisherman? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Based on what the legislature has handed down, if they're being allocated 25% of the rockfish and the cabazon and greenling, et cetera, et cetera, 25%, then I think now there's only 174 of them mm-hmm. with restricted access. I think they should be paying their fair share. Now, I spoke with Mike Weber, and he said they'll probably be readdressing that 7.7 million. I mean, that's just totally unrealistic now. But I think the department should come up with what the actual cost of managing them is. I've spoken with wardens up and down the state, and for instance, Fort Bragg area, the wardens up there, they spend 50% of their time enforcing the commercials. And actually, the recreational sector is an easier sector to enforce because the guys are coming up the river and the warden just waves the guy over. But some of the live fishermen, sometimes they come in at 2 o'clock in the morning. And if these guys want to enforce the trip limits, I mean, these wardens are going to have to be out there, 24/7 in order to do that. So I think that, I mean, we've realized that, we're off the water till July 1st. And, that's it's a tough pill to swallow, but we've swallowed it. But, man, it's really rubbing salt in the wounds. If we got to pay, continue to pay, starting January 1st for the enforcement, the research, and the management of these guys that are taking 25% of the resource.
Okay.
So I think, to answer your question, 11,000 seems awful high. The herring industry, there's a fishery management plan for that. I know I would like to see this fishery something like the herring fishery where they pay for their cost. Plus, they also have a warden there, and they have certain landing ports, because I really think you're going to have certain landing ports to enforce these trip limits. British Columbia, they have the live fishermen up there. They pay their fair share, and then they have a time and a certain port that they come into. So they have a warden there sitting on the dock, and they pay for that warden's time to enforce it. But $500, that just... it felt comfortable, I guess. I don't know where 500 came from. But that doesn't pay for one warden and a gun with two bullets in it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Randy. Joe? Joe's got a point.
Joe Milton, Fish and Game Legal. I just said at the last meeting, but since there was no quorum, that quote that Mr. Fry read was a brief bullet point document basically for the commissioner's benefit to just outline what some of these issues were. It was not intended to be a definitive treatise on the subject. One thing I didn't add, because I was trying to keep it under 2 pages, was that the Nearshore Fisheries Management Act itself says that the costs of managing the program will be permit fees and other funds appropriated by the legislature. So the idea that somehow there's a closed system that only permit fees can fund the management
we know that.
Things we know just that. Isn't true.
Yeah, we know that.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland, I think that we have forgotten that every commercially landed fish has a landing tax associated with it, and each fishery should support its own individual maintenance from these landing taxes. Why this is not brought out really bothers me. I guess being a sport fisherman, they only pay for certain things and rush those fish home without having them inspected at the landing port. All right, these landing taxes are what are supposed to finance the fisheries. Why is this not brought out? Why? Because the Department of Fish and Game continually conceals information. I would like to talk about restricted access fishery. I would like to talk about the first restricted access fishery program initiated in the state of California.
Mr. Weakland, we're talking about the nearshore restricted access.
Restricted access fishery. The first one that we had in California was abalone. Now, the first thing that we had in the abalone fishery was a written test, so that you knew the biology of the species, the identifying factors, and the laws requiring the harvest of these. Why is this not included in restricted access? We learned a great deal. 80% of the fishermen were knocked out of the fishery because they were not able to recite the laws properly. Out of the 20% that were left, less than 3% ever got a permit. We had a two-for-one buyout. We had landing requirements to renew our permits. They had to be used or lost. We had a two-for-one buyout. We found out that that is detrimental to the resource, and that if someone invests enough money to pay for two permits and a boat, they're going to want to hurry up and get their investment back. This is detrimental to the resource. This is not a good program. The other thing is harvest rights. You're keeping it a secret as the formula on how these harvest rights will be issued. First, we say that it'll be a history of catch, and the one who has the most history of catch gets the most quota. Well, that's almost hypocrisy, because you'll be rewarding the people that have over-harvested to excess. What about quality rather than quantity? What about the fishermen that don't fill their boat up? They want to make sure that they have a good-looking fish for market when they get there, and not just overload them and the 30,000 pounds on the bottom has to be sold as dog food and cat meal. I think quality of the load, not the quantity. So someone that has a small load or good quantity fish should also have the same allocated shares as someone that has over-harvested and had excessive fish on board. The other thing is, when we were in Monterey, we had some commissioners missing. Today we have commissioners missing again, but no explanation given. At the last meeting, it was requested that on this item, we request a reconsideration of the opening of the Channel Islands Marine Protected Areas because we see after analyzing the facts that it might not be the proper route. Also, I would like to request the opening of abalone fishing south of San Francisco. Do we want to create jobs or do we want to eliminate them? Do we want to hurt our economy or do we want to try and preserve it? I can tell you right now, millions of dollars and hundreds of jobs would be created if you would open up fishing south of San Francisco for abalone. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the commissioners that were not present in Monterey, the issue of landing tax was raised on this item. There were three or four commercial fishermen that raised that issue at that time as a way to increase income to the Department for Management of the Nearshore Fishery. It was something that the Department, I think, is looking into, not only for the nearshore or rockfish species, but the landing taxes for a lot of species need to be reconsidered, and it takes legislative action to make those necessary changes.
Actually, I was sitting up here thinking, I thought maybe... I guess it. Would you tell me it hasn't been adjusted in 50 years, landing tax?
Something 40 or 50
40
years.
40 or 50 years. Maybe this is a good project for Al Tauscher. The Legislative Policy Committee can look at maybe sponsoring, drafting some legislation along with some other organizations. Bob, you'll do it?
No.
You want to make a comment? Come to the microphone, yeah, please. Yeah.
Are you going to support the $11,000 fee, too?
Yeah.
Huh?
No.
No? Okay.
Yeah. Good morning. I'm Bob Strickland with United Anglers of California. I think what Randy's trying to say is we just would like them to pay their fair share. $11,000 is not realistic. I mean, we know that. Yeah. But is $500 enough? Or is there another way to get more money? We think that restoration money is being used, our license money is being used, and we don't think that's where it should go. I mean, our money's supposed to go for taking care of the recreational land. As far as Al Tauscher goes, I think that's a good idea, except if they're going to start the restricted access this March, because this is why you're having a special meeting, because if we don't, they won't have the time to get the thing. Then the fees aren't going to be adjusted until another year from now. So I don't know if that would be, you know, something that would work down the future. I mean, our next meeting is not till March.
Well, no, I realize that. But, I mean, certainly you can get in touch with Mr. Gaines and let him know. You know, I'd like to think that Al Tauscher, while we certainly have our quarterly meetings, the subcommittees are meeting in advance of that. And you know, putting forth ideas and moving on issues. So, you know, I'm sure Bill would be more than happy to entertain that idea. So, I mean, you need to get Bill's in fairly soon.
Okay.
So,
My request, though, is that maybe you come up with a number that we can live with for a year.
Well, you bring up a – you and Randy bring up, yeah. I think, a reasonable point. I mean, in terms of is the under the proposal, is a four-time bump from, what is it, $125 to $500 or whatever times it is. But the bottom line is it that significant bump, is that enough to underwrite the reasonable share of the cost of the program? To me, that's something – if we adopt this program, that's something we're going to look at right away, particularly given the budgetary constraints we're working under here in California. I mean, clearly it's something we ought to be one of the first things we take a look at as we design the program. Once the program's designed, put together, the monitoring programs and the rest of it that goes along with it, at some point in time, hopefully we'll be able to within a year to year and a half, maybe 18 months, revisit that and adjust it accordingly. That's what I would hope we can.
You mean up from 500?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know whether, 500 is a figure. I mean, it could have been 1,200. We could have gone to 2,000. We could have, but, it's all a balancing act. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out some reasonable place to start, and then from that we can measure whether, in fact, we're getting the cost of the fees are reasonable, given the fact that these really, we really balance the user fee against general fund dollars in managing a lot of these programs. So, you make a good point. I mean, we need to take a close look at it on an ongoing basis, and even more so today than we have in the past, probably.
But why wouldn't 7 work rather than?
I don't know, Bob.
Well,
why wouldn't 11,000 work better?
No,
realistic. I'm not here to. I'm not going to debate you whether 500 is less sufficient than 7 or 1,000. We got to pick a number and move with it, and then assess it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Just know that we're going to be taking a strong look at it, and we'll make those adjustments accordingly.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
And the boss may call me up and say, "Hey, we need more money."
I think one of the things that's been overlooked, and Mr. Milton touched on it, is his comment at the very end about other funds as appropriated by the legislature. The majority of the funds, was my understanding, and Patty may correct me if I'm wrong, but the money that was provided to the department for implementation of the MLMA is from the general fund and not license fees or permit fees. So you need to keep that in consideration also when we deal with this issue.
Anybody else?
I just want to make a comment about some of the comments that were made. And if people would have paid attention, it was explained why sometimes commissioners aren't here. It's just too bad that we don't read about that instead of reading about when we're not here in the newspaper. But that's one of the reasons we're here today, because there were feelings from this commission that this is important enough of an issue that we should have a full contingent of commissioners to act on it. And unfortunately, because like it was explained before, these are not full-time jobs, and people have real jobs that they have to deal with. Sometimes they can't make it. So, and I think $500 is a good first step and gives us something to work with and take a look at. And if it needs to be changed, we'll recognize that down the road. So.
Yeah, I made some of my initial comments before we started the discussion. I mean, again, this is an important step. It is only a step in terms of the implementation of the Nearshore Fisheries Management Plan. I think it speaks well of all who have been involved in it. Clearly, it's an ongoing process that we're going to be making changes to as we move along, consistent with our commitment for stakeholder involvement and constituent involvement in this process. So given that, I would like to make a motion that we approve item number 6, the Nearshore Fisheries Restricted Access Program, as outlined in exhibit number 6.
The department's recommendation?
Yeah.
I second that.
All right. I hear you loud and clear. I understand your points. And as the commissioners have said before, I think we'll take a look. This is a start. By no means is it the end. I'm one that would rather see that those that are participating in this market pay up front as opposed to just strictly relying on landing fees. I know that some friends of mine that hold commercial license in other states that are worth quite a bit of money on the market. So those that are taking resources ought to be willing to pay their fair share for the program and for making a profit off those resources. So we'll get there. So just give us some time. Let us examine the program and how much it's going to cost us. All right? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Is that an applause I heard?
Item 7 is consideration of adoption of proposed changes to Section 120.3, Title 14, California Code of Regulations, and then to add Section 120.45 of Title 14, California Code of Regulations regarding the commercial spot prawn fishery. Just briefly, the Commission at its August 2nd meeting in San Luis Obispo received the Department's observer report. Contained in that report were a series of recommendations. The Commission authorized staff to publish notice on all of the recommendations provided by the Department to ensure a wide range of issues to discuss and receive comments on. That legal notice was published. The Commission was scheduled to adopt this item at its December 6th meeting in Monterey. As previously noted, there was no quorum present. The subcommittee did not make any recommendation on this item. In fact, there was no time to receive public testimony on this item. Therefore, this item is scheduled to receive public testimony and to consider any action that the Commission may want to take on this item. Before we get into the Department's presentation, I'll bring the Commission's attention to a letter that is dated December 16th, 2002, from Mr. Ilsa New, attorney representing many, if not all, of the commercial spot prawn trawl fishermen. Requesting that this item be continued to a future meeting, indicating that one of the experts that he had present on December 6th is out of state today and unable to attend. That's Dr. John Rice. You have also in your package the letter which I sent to him dated December 17th, indicating that I would bring this matter up for the Commission to decide. The Commission can only decide as a body when it comes together at a scheduled meeting. So I'd like you to consider that before we get into the substance of this item, if you wish to do that or wish to continue it. I don't know if your legal counsel, Mr. Cunningham, has any comments that he would like to make at this time on this request.
Come on, Bill.
Mr. President, members of the Commission, Bill Cunningham, your counsel. As in the past, we have received a request on an item asking for continuance of the item. As Mr. Traynor properly pointed out, the Commission itself must convene, and then and only then can it act on such a request for continuance. That a continuance request is of the nature that requires the full Commission to meet and address. Mr. Traynor has stated it correctly, I believe, in suggesting that the Commission can, at this point in time, if it wishes, accept that request and continue this matter if it so chooses, or can deny that request at this time and continue with the item.
I'd be interested in hearing from the department. Are there specific reasons why, I mean, what happens with the management of this fisheries if we extend it? That's what I'm interested in hearing. Yeah.
I I'll try and use it this time. Christine Barsky, senior marine biologist with Fish and Game. The spot prawn trawl fishery is during its closed season right now. On February 1, it reopens.
Okay.
And so if a decision is not made right now, then they will resume fishing as they normally do.
Okay. Thank you. That's good enough for me. I would suggest that we not postpone and make a decision today.
I'd like that in the form of a motion, please.
So move.
I agree, because if we're going to postpone it in order to have this action before the February opening, we would have to have another special meeting, and it's difficult enough to get a quorum at these meetings as it is. So I'm for seconding the motion of moving forward today.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, also in your handout material this morning is email from David Couch, a trap fisherman that is opposed to the continuation of the spot prawn trawl fishery. Also a letter from United Anglers of Southern California opposed to the trawl fishery. And then in the red binder is an exhibit from Ilson New regarding his presentation this morning. And with that, I'll turn it back to Christine Barsky to make the department's presentation.
As Bob Trainer said, in July of this year, the department released the results of their bycatch observer program of the spot prawn trawl and trap fisheries. Observations were made over a one-year period between 2000 and 2001. The goal was to acquire information on the relative amount and type of bycatch taken in the spot prawn fishery through onboard observations. The program was initiated because of concerns from the commission and the public on the level of bycatch in the spot prawn trawl fishery. This program was partially funded by the industry. A number of groundfish species were taken as bycatch, as indicated in our report. However, the reason why we're here is because the estimated bycatch of bokashio from the observer program was 4.6 metric tons in a one-year period. Bokashio, as you know, has been designated an overfished species. It's under a federal rebuilding plan, and the scientists estimate that it could take decades for the animal to recover. Even with no directed fishery or target fishing on the species. This year, the state exceeded its combined recreational and commercial harvest limit of 100 metric tons in April. In 2003, there is not going to be a bokashio allocation, just a minimum harvest level that allows for some of our state fisheries to continue to operate. The state has committed to keeping the incidental catch of bokashio from all sources to 11 metric tons. This summer, the commission directed the department to prepare regulations on the trawl fishery based on recommendations in the bycatch observer report. Options included a total ban on the use of trawl gear, a ban on the use of trawl gear coupled with a trawl-to-trap conversion, area depth, season, and gear restrictions. In light of the drastic reductions in bokashio catch allowances, the department is recommending a complete ban on the use of trawl gear to take spot prawn. If the commission is interested in a trawl ban coupled with a trawl-to-trap conversion, the department would like authorization to go back to notice with potentially additional restrictions on the permits that are converted from trawl-to-trap and a concurrent reevaluation of the existing trap-restricted access program. circumstances have changed since this package was developed, and the trawl prohibition and conversion to traps option as proposed in the package is incomplete. I believe Mr. Duffy just hands you an overhead, since we don't have an overhead, sheet that just shows you, it says restricted access trap program on top of it. Mike's got it. What you need to know is that we initiated a restricted access trap fishery for spot prawn in April of this year. There are 22 permittees in that fishery. 18 of them have transferable permits with trap limits, but no catch limits. The capacity goal for that fishery or for that tier is 17. There are also 4 non-transferable permits that have trap limits and an annual yearly take of 2,500 pounds. And there is no capacity goal for that fishery. What I'm trying to say is this whole program was based on only the landings that the trappers made. We were not looking at the trawl fishery. They're essentially two gear types, two different fisheries. So the whole program was based on trap landings. So if you were to develop this conversion program, we'd need to reevaluate the capacity goal for the fishery after adding more permits. You'd probably need to look at the types of permits, including things like transferability, restrictions such as trap limits, seasons, specific areas where you could fish, or areas that are off limits. The Spot Prawn Advisory Committee that has both trap and trawl members on it helped design the program. So we would need to reconvene that group of people. We also might need to consider the people, the trappers, that were eliminated from this program in April, because there were people who had made trap, fishermen who'd made trap landings that were excluded because they didn't meet the requirements. The Pacific Fishery Management Council and the department are taking action to create the California Rockfish Conservation Area in 2003. That's also known as the CIRCA. No trawling will be permitted between 100 and 150 fathoms south of Point Conception. This is a prime fishing area for spot prawns. 80% or more of the spot prawn trawling that takes place in that area. Also, north of Conception, the depth area where they cannot trawl is 50 to 150, and north of Point Reyes, it's 50 to 250 fathoms. If spot prawn trawling is allowed to continue, the fleet would be operating on the edges of their normal fishing grounds. The depth restrictions in the CIRCA, the Rockfish Conservation Area, could also concentrate the trawl vessels in Southern California, where most of the spot prawn trapping takes place. The establishment of the Channel Islands MPAs in 2003 will also displace several spot prawn trappers. The second page of your handout shows the existing spot prawn package as it is before you. I just wanted to review those options, keeping in mind that they were designed to reduce bycatch, but now with the new information and the new requirements we're under, we're trying to avoid any bycatch. So the first one is spot prawn trawling is an open access fishery at this point in time, so we were suggesting a moratorium to prevent an increase in effort, but that does not affect the current level of bycatch. The second one was require observer cooperation. That is being taken care of in other regulatory action, and again, that would not affect bycatch. Number three is the ban on the use of trawl gear to take spot prawns. Number four is the ban on the use of trawl gear to take spot prawns coupled with some form of conversion program to allow trawlers to convert to traps. The fifth option was a depth restriction that actually is more severe than the limits that would be placed in the California Rockfish Conservation Area. Essentially, it would force all spot prawn trawlers out to outside of 150 fathoms south of Point Reyes and 250 fathoms north of Point Reyes. there would still be an unknown level of interaction with Boccaccio when all this trawl effort was forced outside. The gear restrictions that are mentioned are small roller gear, 8 inches or less. This is a requirement in the California Rockfish Conservation Area, so any trawling that takes place now will in that area will require that. Outside, it's not a requirement. A hard grade excluder is a type of bycatch reduction device. It is one of the three that California has allowed for the pink shrimp fishery. When this study was done, all the spot prawn trawlers were using fisheye excluders or a double cod in. We don't really have any specific data to predict what extent Boccaccio bycatch would be reduced with the use of a hard grade excluder. The data that's available was from the pink shrimp fishery on canary rockfish. Also, there is a reduction in the fishing season. Right now, they have a 9-month fishing season. There was a proposal to reduce it to 6. Again, it might serve to reduce bycatch, but you could also have a lot more effort during the 6-month period that you kept open. The last option was a vessel monitoring system. We believe that should wait until the federal program, they are going to do a pilot program in the coming year, has been initiated, and the results can be evaluated. Also, a vessel monitoring system, again, would not affect the level of bycatch. And those are the points the department wanted to make, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
So as I understand the department's recommendation here is a trawl, a prohibitional trawl, and you're also suggesting a trawl prohibition with trap conversion working over a period of time. How would that work? Describe to me.
You're right, and I didn't give you a complete statement on that. If you're interested in that, we would like to go back to notice and come back to you at your late August meeting.
Okay.
And we feel that in order to convene the spot prawn advisory committee, and you'd have to have both trawlers and trappers this time, you know, working out this new program, we'd have to look at a new capacity goal. Essentially, we'd have to start all over with a restricted access fishery. Maybe even consider the people you forced out in April when we initiated this program.
What do you mean, consider? To bring them back in?
Well.
What do you mean?
Yeah. What I'm saying. In other words, would you consider people who they had made landings by trap, but they didn't meet the qualifications that were in this initial program? If you reopen the program and develop a whole new program, you may need to include those people.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. Thanks.
We'll move to public testimony at this time. Mr. Ilson New, followed by Dr. Rich. And as Mr. New's coming up, I'll also point out that previous correspondence between Mr. New and myself, Mr. New, in representing the spot prawn trawlers, asked for additional time to speak on their behalf, and I had indicated that traditionally the commission, when individual is representing a group, that they have approximately 10 minutes to make their presentation. If they need more, they need to request that from the commission. Mr. New.
Good morning, President Flores, members of the commission, Executive Director Trainer. A few mechanical matters first, and that is I just wanted to confirm that the commission and the commissioners have received Dr. Rice's, I believe, PowerPoint slides. Mr. Trainer wrote me a letter on that. I'm not sure of the I'm not terribly computer or overhead literate, so, but I think it's the PowerPoint slides that he was going to present at the December 6th meeting that you, I want to confirm that you received my video from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife report number 96-4, which I presented to each commissioner at the August 30th meeting in Oakland, and then, of course, the red binder today with my comments dated December 19th, and that you will, that you have or will consider all of those materials before your vote, and that all those materials will be included, of course, in the administrative record of the commission. Now, if I may proceed without waiving any objections that myself or my clients have to the holding of this meeting and the refusal of a continuance. Let me, if I may, ask you to turn your attention to my December 19th outline that I've made for you. Page 2, the major points I'm going to discuss, hopefully within 10 minutes, are numbered 1 through 9. The first point is, as Ms. Barsky and the department pointed out, the only evidence that the commission and the department are using for this proposed recommendation of closure is this famous, quote, California Department of Fish and Game spot prawn trawl and trap fishery bycatch observer program 2000-2001 report, unquote, here and after from me, quote, report, unquote. Point number 2. The report is fatally composed of erroneous statistical interpretations, conclusions, extrapolations, calculations, etc. I refer you to Exhibit 1, which is Dr. John Rice's analysis of the report. Dr. John Rice is chairman of the Statistical Department of the University of California, Berkeley. If you look at his report, you will see one of the major flaws is a lack of randomness in the sampling. Now, I don't know how much you know about statistics. I think I flunked Stat 1A at Berkeley, but randomness is the elimination of prejudice and bias. Randomness in a survey, which is rudimentary and fundamental to statistical analysis and surveying, randomness is why you don't include a city that's having an NBA trials in a survey of the average height of the American male. There was no randomness in this survey. And as I say, if you'll refer to Dr. Rice's report, you'll see why, and he'll point out exactly where the randomness was there. And without randomness of the sampling, you cannot have a statistically sound survey. And furthermore, even if you do have the randomness, it has to be validated, which is a term of art in the statistical industry. Point number 3, the report contains no assessment of uncertainty, or in layman terms, margin of error. You cannot have a valid statistical survey without establishing an assessment of uncertainty. What we have here in this report is, without that, they extrapolated from the sample to the universe, and that's invalid and useless if you don't state a percentage of uncertainty. You will see that the report used estimated fish weights and estimated fractions of the trawl catch in the report, and those estimates were reported as being exact when they were in fact estimated. Now, in many circles, that's called lying. Point number 4, Dr. Alice Rich, whose PhD is from the University of Washington, Seattle, School of Aquatic Sciences and Fisheries, which, as you probably know, is nationally recognized as probably being number 1 in the country, also agrees with Dr. Rice regarding the report being fatally flawed. Point number 5. The department and the commission failed to obtain the data that the department and the commission characterized as, quote, imperative, unquote, in the commission's July 13, 1999, quote, initial statement of reasons. And I quote from that statement, quote, it is imperative that the department obtain data on the effectiveness of both types of fish excluders with onboard observations, ... unquote. This imperative data was never obtained. Director Heitz's department memorandum dated November 19, 2002, admitted, quote, because there is also no data available to predict to what extent bacchantio bycatch would be reduced by the use of hard grade excluders, et cetera, these options were also not considered to be viable. What is happening here is the commission and the department are proposing that the department and commission's failure to obtain the information that the department and the commission said was imperative to obtain as an excuse for not considering other effective alternatives. That's what they're saying. That's what Director Hyde said, because there's no data available. And who was supposed to collect the data? The department and the commission said it was imperative. The court in Paraco Inc. v. Department of Agriculture stated as to the constitutional basis of due process, quote, the means adopted to produce the public benefit intended must be reasonably necessary to accomplish that purpose, unquote. The use of finfish excluders and their effectiveness would make closure of the spot prawn trawl fishery not reasonably necessary. It's a denial of constitutional due process. The commission and the department must consider less restrictive, less burdensome alternatives to complete closure. In the department's July 12, 1999 initial statement of reasons, it stated under description of alternatives to regulatory actions in part, it is logical and imperative that any proven relatively simple gear modification be implemented which will reduce finfish bycatch, period. To not do so would be to ignore recommendations of fishery biologists, both federal and from other states, who believe in the efficacy of this or other devices which reduce bycatch, unquote. Point number six. The closure of the spot prawn trawl fishery by the commission, relying upon the egregiously flawed and defective report developed by the department, would be a direct violation of law, Fish and Game Code Section 7710, which requires the commission and the department to use the best available science. The best available science, in part, is as follows. In 2001, the total take of rockfish by all three prawn fisheries was 6,512 pounds. The department's figures show that approximately 5% of the rockfish bycatch is bacchantio. That would mean 5% taken by all three prawn fisheries would be 325 pounds and something less for the spot prawn trawl fishery. That's the best science, not estimates based upon estimates, although represented as being exact. The raw data, which is actual, that the department used for the reports, the actual facts were that there were two bacchantio caught in Southern California in 17 toes in the entire survey, weighing 1.8 pounds. There were 25 bacchantio caught in Northern California, of which 12 were caught in one day by one boat through some fluke, which is a skewed figure, by the way, in the statistical industry. 25 bacchantio in Northern California in the entire survey. If you give those a 4-pound average, that's 100 pounds. That's 101.8 pounds for the total survey. That's the best science, because that's actual, not estimates based upon estimates. The department came out, if you look at page 4, item B, the proposed regulatory statement, commission's statement of proposed regulatory action, the total estimated bycatch of bacchantio on page 1, paragraph 3, in the spot prawn trawl fishery for 1 year of observations was approximately 5 tons. The department is telling you that their estimate was 10,000 pounds, when in fact there was 101.8 pounds actually caught in the survey. That's from the department's raw data. We got a hold of those papers. and that's what we discovered. Once again, the same report on page 3, paragraph 2. During the September and October 2002, the department estimates that the total incidental take of Boccaccio would be in the range of 1 to 1.4 tons. Again, this is based upon actual data of 101.8 pounds caught, not estimates on estimates. And again, in the department's memorandum to the commission dated November 19, 2002, page 1, paragraph 4, quote, the department spot prawn trawl bycatch observer program of both trawl and trap gear estimated that the bycatch of Boccaccio in the spot prawn trawl fishery is 4.6 metric tons a year. Again, this is on the raw data of 101 pounds. Now, that's using my figure of 4 pounds per fish for 25 fish. The best science, according to Section 7710 of the Fish and Game Code, is the true and actual honest facts, where there were two Boccaccio caught in the southern survey weighing 1.8 pounds, and there were 25 Boccaccio caught in the northern part of the survey weighing, if you will, 100 or approximately that many pounds, depending on what you estimate their weight at. The department admits in their report that the scale they used on the boats had a plus or minus 5 pound variance. Hello? How can you estimate from a scale that varies that much? So if a Boccaccio was 2 pounds or 3 pounds, it would weigh minus 7 pounds, minus 8, but you can't have a minus figure in sampling. Point nine, the spot prawn trawl fishery offers to the commission and to the department to provide all of the boats, the equipment, the gear, the manpower, and the fuel to perform an actual, true, correct spot prawn trawl bycatch fishery survey. Free. No charge, because we're interested in obtaining a survey that will, and this is our last point, pass peer review. The department's report was never given to peer review, and scientifically that is like running auto or human speed trials without two stopwatches. You don't do that. That's unacceptable scientifically. In conclusion, we ask that the commission reject the report based upon the flaws and defects contained in Dr. Rice's analysis and Dr. Rich's analysis. It is not the best science. It is the worst science available. That it accept, and excuse the misspelling there, that it accept the offer of the spot prawn trawl fishery to provide all the personnel, vessels, gear, and fuel and time to perform another survey, and number three, have any report coming out of that survey be submitted to peer review. If there are any questions, I'll be delighted to answer them.
Dr. Rich, followed by Sandy Winston.
Excuse me, Mr. Trainer, members of the commission. Dr. Rich's mother apparently suffers from dementia, and she called me yesterday. Her father was struck with severe flu, and therefore he couldn't take care of her mother. Apparently requires 24-hour care. So she had to go to Petaluma and to her parents' house and take care of her mother. And I said that I would speak for her, which I can do very briefly. If you will turn to Exhibit 2, why don't we wait for Commissioner Christman to come back? This would probably be an appropriate time to put on the record that Dr. Rich and Dr. Rice were both present at the December 6th 2002 commission meeting from 8:30 in the morning until Commissioner Sukat, for some reason or another, waited until 1:10, 1:15 to announce that there was no quorum at 8:30. and that item 20 of that meeting agenda would not be considered, which at $300 an hour for Dr. Rich and $400 an hour for Dr. Rice, in addition to travel time, of course, and so on, but I'm speaking only of the 4.5 hours that they could have gone home and not charged for, were, of course, charged to my clients, which is approximately $3,200 of direct loss, which could have been prevented by announcing at 8:30 that a quorum was not available and that, therefore, item 20 of the agenda would not be discussed. Do we have any idea when Commissioner Crisman's returning? Or?
Yeah, I think he just stepped out to the restroom.
I'm sorry?
I think he just stepped out to the restroom.
Oh. Well, we'll learn even more about him then, won't we?
But I'll let him know that you called him doctor. I'm sure he'd.
Yeah.
I've always wanted an honorary doctorate degree myself. So
I can have you one printed up in Taiwan by tomorrow by tomorrow morning.
Mr. Flores, while we're waiting a second here, you made reference to an Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife letter or?
No, it's a report. It's a full report. Oregon now requires a hard grade. Matter of fact, it was, I guess you didn't get one, hard grade fin fish excluder LB, the Nordmore, because it is so effective. I think I have an extra report I can give you.
Did Oregon report to you that they're phasing out the spot prawn trawl fishery in mm-hmm. Oregon? Mm-mm. They did not report that
nope.
to you. Both Oregon and Washington are Washington has banned it, and sure. yeah. Oregon reported at the last council meeting that they would no longer allow it very shortly.
Which could be for a number of reasons which you haven't explained. Correct?
The yes. doctor's back, Mr. New. You can go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you.
Actually, why have they?
Let's see. Dr. Rich's report, if you just turn to Exhibit 2 of the red binder.
You can answer.
Dr. Rich prepared a 7-point analysis of the department's report. Item number one, point number one, that the scale was plus or minus, scale used in the survey was plus or minus 5 pounds. And therefore, even the fish that you started with in any sample, even though they weren't random, would have to be estimated. And that's not the way statistical analysis is done. You start with certainty. You start with 5 households that were watching the Super Bowl, and from that sampling of the universe, you project to the total. But you do not estimate how many households were watching the Super Bowl, and then based upon that estimate, project again. Point number two, there were some outright guesses. Mr. Riley, who was one of the co-authors of the report, admitted that not all of the weights in the sample of the fish were taken, that sometimes, once again, they estimated from length. And again, inaccuracy of the sampling, you cannot project from an estimate to an estimate. You cannot validly project, excuse me. Point number three, the report did not use standard methodologies to measure bycatch. That's a technical, statistical principle that I'll let you read her report. Number four, 1 year's data is generally considered for baseline only and not the data upon which to draw conclusions and make an analysis. In other words, as in the Channel Island matter, you do 1 year, you get a baseline of the reserves, and then you compare against that baseline. Here, the report covered 1 year, and it's being used as the final statistical analysis instead of a baseline for comparison. Number five, Mr. Riley admitted that there were mathematical errors in the report, and there was no explanation. For example, there was a range given of 8 pounds to 9.5 pounds. Mr. Riley admitted the error that 12 bacacci were caught in Northern California in 1 day by one boat out of the total of 25 bacacci that were taken in the entire survey in Northern California. And there was no explanation of that skewed figure, whether that person was getting revenge on Bocacci or what have you. Point number six, there were no tests run to determine which samples were taken and which were representative of each toe. And without that validation, you not only have to have a random sampling, but you must validate the sampling, which is a term of art in the statistical industry. And that was never done here. Point number seven, the ranges of the Bocacci are so large that the data is considered unreliable. And lastly, Dr. Rich pointed out, as does Dr. Rice and myself, there was no peer review. And once again, that's like time trials without a second stopwatch. It's unacceptable scientifically, and I propose to you that it's unacceptable logically.
Thank you.
Sandy Winston, followed by Gordon Fox.
Good morning. I'm Sandy Winston. I'm a commercial spot prawn trawl fisherman. I've got a couple of videotapes for you, Mr. Flores. Yeah.
Okay. You can bring forward. Thank you.
The first videotape is of our of the commission's August 2nd meeting, where I pointed out that I felt that the commission wasn't really paying attention and that they weren't, you know, that it was a done deal, which you, Mr. Flores, and Mr. Kellogg assured me that it wasn't, and they were going to consider this very carefully and come to a conclusion at your December meeting. The second tape is the August 28th or 30th meeting, where without any further findings or anything, you shut down our spot prawn trawl fishery with an emergency closure that subsequently we went to court and a judge determined was unconstitutional, open back up. However, we lost the 42 best days weather-wise of our spot prawn trawl season. Basically, the bulk of my annual income was gone for that closure. Anyway, I just wanted you to have a look at that so that you understand where I'm coming from here. I just have a couple of points I'd like to make. First off, I'd like to address the sport fishing community's concern. And what's happened here is that, like, we've used this Bocaccio as a reason to shut down a bunch of fisheries when, in fact, I guess later on next year, the new Bocacci survey is going to bring out that maybe the Bocacci resource isn't in as bad a shape as we thought, but we're not going to wait till then to make a bunch of changes, I guess. At any rate, the sport fishing industry is now against us even more so than before. They're fighting for 80% instead of the 75% of the nearshore landings that they feel that they're entitled to for some reason, and they'd like to see the nearshore fishermen pay a bigger percentage of the cost of managing themselves. A lot of the cost of managing our fisheries has come from Stahl Kennedy funds. That's money that was supposed to be designated for the commercial fishing industry to enhance the commercial fishing industry, and 98% of it has been used against us, most of it by government agencies in funding their own operations. That's money that was supposed to go to the commercial fishing industry, millions and millions of dollars. It also is a good reason why the National Marine Fisheries Service would lower our quotas, because as soon as they lower our quota, then in 1 month, the next month, they're going to get more import duties, more SK funds. Okay, it's a losing deal. I think that I don't expect to get any kind of fair consideration or treatment here. There's an obvious bias against trawl fisheries, a lot of it by people that are going to come testify after me that probably have no idea how a trawl net works. Somebody told them trawl fishing was bad. They believe it's bad. And maybe they'll get straightened out later on, but it'll be too late for me. The only place I can hope to get fair treatment, I think, is in a court of law, and I imagine that's where we'll be going next. You know, it's sad. I'm upset. I know the difference between right and wrong. I know the difference between what's true and what isn't. And I watch people testify based on a lie that they know is a lie, and it's okay. And other people make decisions that affect hundreds of people's lives. And I ask myself, I guess, even from a patriotic standpoint, okay, how can I let this happen? How can I let this injustice go by without fighting it? Millions of American bodies have been stacked like cordwood fighting for rights for other people in other countries, much less ours. What right do I have? I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed that I've allowed this commission to treat me the way it has. That's why I'm spending all this money and going to court. You know, it's funny. A couple years ago, I got a call from my dermatologist. He said I had malignant melanoma and I had a 55% chance of 5-year survival. And I laughed. I said, that's better than fishing. It is. We're done, okay? Or it looks like we're done. I'm going to spend whatever I have left in time and in money. I'm not going to let you beat me. It ain't right. This report that you're looking at, well, Mr. Riley told me a couple of years before we ever had this observer program that the fishermen paid for that he was going to see the spot prawn trawl fishery closed. They're picking on us because we're easy. There's only 20 of us. They didn't think there's going to be a fight. Well, there'll be a fight, and it'll keep going on and on and on. I'm not giving up. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gordon Fox, followed by Kate Wing.
Morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
I didn't bring this for a barbecue. I
didn't. Well, we thought maybe that's what it was.
Everybody see that?
Yes.
My name's Gordon Fox. I own a spot prawn trawl boat. Been a shrimp fisherman for 25 years. So I'm not a commissioner and I'm not a legislator, but I'm a very good shrimp fisherman. And that's why I came here to talk to you guys today. I've been in California for 5 years fishing spot prawns. And during that time, I've been an active participant in the advisory committee dealing with spot prawn issues. I've really made an effort to help improve management of this fishery. On August the 2nd, I was in San Luis Obispo meeting at which President Flores expressed some dismay at the lack of data produced by the study. And I must tell you that I share that sentiment. My vessel was one of the 9 to carry an observer, and I had the lowest rate of bycatch reported in that study. I was pretty shocked to learn that only 30% of the tows made on my boat while the observer was aboard were reported in that study after making the effort to participate. So my logbooks indicate that my bycatch ratios would have been much better than what was reported, even though I had the best reported, had all the tows been taken and reported as I would have expected a reasonable observation to do. So in response to the idea that some of the participation hasn't been up to the level that it could have been, I might agree with that, but I would say to you that more data was available, and perhaps the staff can answer why it wasn't used. During the time I've been going to quite a few advisory committee meetings, the department never suggested that observations be made using a rigid grade type excluder, as you see here. There hasn't even been an advisory committee meeting since May or June, I believe, well before some of the federal decisions began to really reduce the amount of bocce that might be able to be allocated for various bycatch type situations, because we all know we can't fish for them. But at that last meeting, a subcommittee was to be formed to make recommendations to the department staff about what further measures could be taken in response to reducing bycatch in the spot prawn trawl fishery. That never did take place. We never heard from them again. And I continued to work after the observer program. I've been using this tool in my net. I'm confident in what I'm able to do with it. It's a sad fact that only fish-style excluders or 3-inch mesh cut-ins were used in this study. I would have been happy to demonstrate the use of this device during the observer program, and many of the prawn fishermen that I know would be happy to donate their time and equipment to show its effectiveness. When I began 5 years ago, spot prawn trawling, no bycatch reduction device of any type was required. And since that time, the allowable take of fish while shrimping has been a rapidly moving target. And we all understand that this is this has been the case. When I began, allowable bycatch of fish was 1,500 pounds a day. And then it went to 500 pounds a day. And then it went to 300 pounds a trip. And now we're faced with a situation where we have no retention of fish at all. Well, during that period of time, the response of the state in regard to its shrimp fisheries has been only to require the use of a fish-eye style bycatch reduction device. And that's, in my view, just not keeping up with what is possible in order to change our fisheries in a way that responds to these types of issues. So my point is that I don't think we ought to be blaming spot prawn fishermen for the lack of the department's ability to keep up, because what we have are rapidly changing federal regulations, and we can certainly find solutions to these types of problems without eliminating people's livelihoods. So that's what I've come here to ask the commissioners to do today. I'm asking you to require the use of a rigid grate finfish excluder in the spot prawn trawl fishery. I believe this device is the most effective and appropriate response to the rapidly changing federal ground fish restrictions. With some modification, and I think it's important to understand that you're allowing two other shrimp fisheries to continue in this state, very similar to what we do, this type of an excluder is very applicable to both ridgeback and pink shrimp fishing. I'm originally from Oregon, and I had a conversation with Bob Hanna, who's a biologist with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and he informed me that in the March of this coming year, they will be making a recommendation to use this style of fish excluder for pink shrimp fishing. And he expects the state of Washington to do the same. The Department of Fish and Wildlife in Oregon has spent a considerable amount of time and money filming the performance of various types of devices, and Ilson had indicated that he has given you a film of that information. And they have come to the conclusion that this is a very effective device. Was doing some research on my own, I've discovered that pink shrimp fishermen in British Columbia use a great style device very much like this. It's also used in a prawn fishery in Australia. So this is not reinventing the wheel. This has been demonstrated to be useful for this type of a purpose. It seems to me unnecessary to eliminate people's livelihoods and banning a fishery totally when we have an effective and relatively inexpensive solution that's been tested and is being implemented in similar fisheries. I built and used this grate that has a 2-inch gap between the bars with some loss of shrimp production. That's the case. We're going to see some shrimp lost as a result of the use of this, but very minimal fish catch. We don't need an expensive observer study to know that this device works. Oregon has already done that. You guys might be familiar also with a Lowry study that was done in the Channel Islands. It's quite old, but they came to the same conclusion a number of years ago that a grid-style device is the most effective that they had tested. So what we have here is a situation that many shrimp fisheries are using this to address this sort of problem with success. And I think that this is a much better solution than putting people out of business. This, is, to me, seems to be the right thing to do for the fish, which is clearly a serious issue, but it's also the right thing to do for the fishermen. And what I'd like to be able to do at this time is explain just a short explanation of how this works. So what we have is this is installed somewhat before the terminal end. You guys are familiar with the term pot end, which is where your fish end up. The installation I made is about approximately 30 feet. If you imagine the end of the net here, 30 feet away, we have this installed against the flow of the water. So there's your shrimp. Here's your water coming at your net. It's installed at an angle of approximately
approximately 45 degrees. No gaps around the outside, and quite a wide opening at the top. What I have done is take this approximately 2.5 feet across, and it extends out in front. It's quite big. And what we have, because we have an angle and the shrimp typically go along the bottom of the net, that the shrimp will go through the grates and the fish will come up and bump against this and go out this opening and swim away unharmed. That's the basic principle of this thing. We do experience some loss of shrimp.
So it's at the intake of the net then, is that what I hear you saying?
That is correct. The water, the opening of the net would be here. The water flow goes like this, and the shrimp pass through, the fish do not. It's a very effective device. So that's what I brought. That's why I brought barbecue grill. You guys have any questions about it?
I was really hoping that you would bring that back. I seen you walk out with that down in Monterey, and I thought you brought a table to feed us on or something.
Well, Jim, you know, I really wish I'd had the opportunity to talk to you about that because, honestly, I made as good an effort as I can to try to do the right thing to participate in a fishery.
All right.
I had a bunch of guys come down from Washington. I had guys from the southern portion of California. We're all ready to go to try to do the right thing at that meeting, and I must be honest with you, it was very disappointing not to be able to do it.
Let me ask you, you said you've been fishing the prawn fish in California for 5 years,
and
you know, prior to that you were in Oregon? Do you still fish Oregon?
I have fishing? A developmental permit for spot prawn fishing in Oregon at this time, and I did want to mention, because LB pointed out that they are intending to try to phase out those fisheries in both Washington and Oregon.
That was my next question to you.
That is very important, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we need to understand that the scale of the fisheries in Oregon and Washington is dramatically different than what we see in California. There's relatively few shrimp in comparison. The size of the grounds and the number of participants is completely different. You guys, you must understand there's a reason with a permit in Oregon that I moved to California. That's because the opportunity to do business is much greater. We have a much larger area in which to fish, and the amount of shrimp available is dramatically greater. So the reasons why there is concern, for example, what we have in Oregon is a developmental structure in which we have 6 trawl permits, 3 of which are active. In Washington, we have, for the last 2 years, 3 permits, 2 of which are active. So the comparison between the two fisheries is dramatically different, and I think that needs to be understood.
Any other question? Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Fox?
Yes.
Could you describe to the commission the types of habitats you target for spot prawn as opposed to pink shrimp? You've used a lot of reference to pink shrimp, and your regulations require, this is one of 3 devices that's required for pink shrimp, but those fisheries are not the same. And
typically, you know, I understand the point you're making, and I'm not here to candy coat what's taking place on the sea bottom. Typically, you're going to see spot prawns live in very steep, sometimes rocky bottom. What you're going to see pink shrimp live in is relatively flat mud bottom. Now, there's certainly a degree of overlap in that situation. What we have taking place here is conservation area. Rockfish conservation area that's being proposed for California is looking at restricting the foot rope size to 8 inches for any type of trawling, and that would exempt and allow ridgeback fishing and pink shrimp fishing to continue. And we're looking at singling out spot prawns and saying that it ought not to continue. There's been an effort for a considerable period of time to reduce the foot rope size on spot prawn nets, and if that's what's necessary in order to keep our fishery alive, then and conform that with the rest of the rockfish conservation zone with the use of these types of excluding devices, perhaps that's an option the commissioners can consider. But what we mustn't be doing is ignoring the fact that there are methods by which we can address the issue of boccaccio and continue our livelihoods. Does that address your question, LB?
Go ahead, LB.
Because I don't want to walk away from here thinking you dodged it.
I didn't want to get into a debate on this issue at this point. I think at the end we'd like to have the opportunity to clarify some matters. And just as a comment at this point, comparing spot prawn trawling with pink shrimp trawling is not a good comparison. Because of the habitats, and also your gear is considerably different between the two fisheries, particularly the foot rope.
Okay.
Thank you.
Kate Wing, followed by Doug Obigi.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the Commission. Thank you very much for having this special hearing today. I also carry the apologies from my colleague, Karen Garrison, who is sorry she can't be here, as she was at the meeting over 3 years ago when the Commission first took up this issue. The Commission has taken a long time to deliberate this issue, and much has changed in the world of fishing in that time, and we appreciate your efforts to truly look thoroughly at all sides of this issue over the last several years. I want to be brief in my comments, since we've made many of these comments before to you, and I believe Mr. Traynor could easily review for you the long history of letters of support for both the closure of the spot prawn trawl fishery and for the conversion programs that have been proposed as options. Again, we still support a closure of this fishery and for a conversion to a trap fishery. I think Ms. Barsky's point about having to revisit that and review that in light of the new possible capacity goals is perfectly adequate, and we would not oppose a conversion plan and revisiting that and reexamining it again over the next year. But I simply want to highlight the importance of where we are right now, which is that the state is being encouraged not to catch any boccaccio at all, and that the regulations adopted by the Pacific Fishery Management Council are extremely draconian because they are intended to protect not only boccaccio, but other rockfish, canary rockfish, yellow-eye rockfish, dark-blocked rockfish, many of these rockfish which are in serious trouble, and that these regulations assume a closure of the spot prawn trawl fishery in California. And if the spot prawn trawl fishery in California is not closed, I expect the Pacific Council to have to re-examine its regulations to make sure that it can meet its goals in order to rebuild this fishery. Not only that, but the recent listing for boccaccio as an endangered species was denied specifically on the grounds of the 2003 groundfish specifications, which were prepared by the Pacific Fishery Management Council. So again, a decision not to close the spot prawn trawl fishery would cause a re-examination of the decision not to list boccaccio as well. Both of those decisions, changing the groundfish regulations and possibly listing boccaccio, would have extremely severe effects on all the fisheries in California, from the recreational fisheries to all the other fisheries which are currently operating under relatively strict regulations right now. We do support this conversion, particularly in a situation where it's not a matter of simply eliminating the spot prawn fishery. It's simply a matter of finding a way to convert it to a gear that we know is cleaner, that sells spot prawns for a higher price, and that provides an opportunity for people to still consume spot prawns, but not fish in a manner that catches so much unacceptable bycatch, that catches so many other finfish, as is demonstrated even by the raw data in the Observer report, and that allows for the California's rockfish populations and for the underwater habitats to recover over the long term. Thank you very much, and we appreciate your consideration today.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Would your organization be willing to help fund some of these, if we decided to go and study it for another year, would your organization be willing to help
chip in? Well, we're not a funding organization. I mean, we are a membership organization. We're funded by our own members. I mean, it's the kind of thing where we have actively sought support for funding from outside foundations in certain situations. I mean, I think one issue that was brought up here today is that there is certainly the opportunity for anyone to get an experimental fishing permit if they wish to test out a certain gear type, and that in some cases that experiment can be funded by the Salt and Stahl Kennedy Grant Program. That funding is used primarily for commercial gear testing and has been in the past. You know, PCFFA has gotten that, PMCC. So there are external funding sources that people could use. I think if the department, if the commission chose to study it for another couple of years, it would be difficult for us to obtain funding for such a study or even to recruit funding for such a study based on the fact that even the preliminary data indicate that this fishery has a very high level of bycatch and because there is an existing trap fishery. I think it's going to be hard to make a case to funders that this is something that needs to be studied overly exhaustively anymore.
So your answer is basically no.
I think we would say that there are much higher priorities for funding in the state of California than doing another study.
The reason I ask is because I see you an awful lot here. You testify an awful lot on a whole host of issues. But a lot of the things that you require of this department and require of this commission require money. But I never see your organizations or organizations like yours, you know, come up with some ideas for funding or, you know, fund some independent studies.
Well,
so that's what I'd like to see.
I think that
rather than the burden be put on the anglers, the commercial fishermen, the hunting community.
Well, I think you could ask members of the department and find out that, in fact, we have found outside funding for a number of activities that the department has undertaken, from studies to facilitation support to a wide variety of projects, and had that money go through the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. It's not something we're unwilling to do at all. But you have to understand, too, that when we're involved with finding the funding, many people believe that any project funded by it is considered suspect. So we often don't publicize our activities to try and find outside funding for the department because we don't want it to bias people's perceptions.
Thank you.
Doug OBG, followed by Barry Brode.
Good morning, President Flores, members of the commission. For the record, my name is Doug Obigi of the Ocean Conservancy, and I, too, must be showing up here too often because Bob knows my name now, and that's got to be a bad sign in some world. I wanted to stress a couple things here. You know, when the commission took action back in 1999, a lot of the conservation community and members of the spot prawn trap community thought that there was a problem. And we encouraged you to phase out this fishery by 2004. You now have substantial data in front of you. It may not be the most perfect data, but the courts have held that the data needs to be the best available science, and this clearly meets that standard. The department made an attempt to have random sampling and got on 9 of the 20 boats that landed over 200 pounds of spot prawns back in 2000. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get on every boat. You know, Mr. New would have you look at the landings records that show that 6,000 pounds of rockfish were landed in a certain year, and he would claim that to be the best available science on what was actually caught on the boat. One of the major concerns of our organization is the discards at sea. And I think that one of the real reasons that we're here in the first place is because for too many years, we didn't count what got dumped overboard. We now have some information that shows that. And as you've heard otherwise, there are also habitat impacts to rocky reefs that are important for rockfish recovery that the trawl fishery will significantly damage. The study looks at the bycatch reduction devices that are currently used by fishermen. There may be ways to improve the fishery, but that shouldn't be done through a regular commission process. I think it's far more appropriate for fishermen to submit an experimental fisheries permit to the PFMC. The state could look at using some of the disaster relief money. They use some of that money for a flatfish trawl survey in Central California an EFP that would allow flatfish fishermen to trawl in some areas that they wouldn't otherwise be allowed to trawl, to look at the kinds of bycatch. You have a clean alternative, and you have evidence that you have a real problem. I urge you to phase out and close this fishery now before we have to go back to the council and ask for other fishermen to be hurt. Thank you.
Barry Brode, followed by Karen Reyna.
Mr. President and members, Barry Broad on behalf of the United Anglers of Southern California. Well, I'm a governor's appointee on the State Building Standards Commission, and I was on the Industrial Welfare Commission. I'm glad to know that the ones that I've sat on are not the only ones where people come and totally rag on the commissioners for, A, not showing up, not listening carefully enough, and never making the right decision. So I sympathize totally with you, having been in the same place and accused over and over again of the same conduct, the last of which was being overly prepared. So I do sympathize. We would support the department's recommendation of closing this fishery and exploring getting these displaced fishermen into the alternative trap fishery. I think that makes the most sense. I believe, with respect to Mr. News assertions, I think that the due process rights of these folks are being observed. I'm just an old labor lawyer, but I seem to recall that there's two kinds of due process, procedural and substantive due process, and certainly all the procedural due process in the world is being afforded these folks here today. They have every right to comment and have commented. In terms of their substantive rights, certainly the matter has been explored exhaustively. It doesn't have to be explored and explored and explored and explored until they're satisfied that the very last stone is unturned. Your commission needs to act rationally and on a rational basis, and there's certainly more than enough evidence to support the department's recommendation here. So that would be our recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Reyna, followed by Tim Eichenberg.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Reyna. I represent the Ocean Conservancy. And I was at the meeting in Long Beach back in 1999 when Karen Garrison had made the request to phase out this fishery. I believe Mr. Crispin was there as well. So this is something that I have been personally involved with for the last 3 years. Just briefly, I feel it necessary to go through the details of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife recommendation, because President Flores had asked about that specifically. I actually have a citation on where you can get that recommendation information if you'd like it. But just briefly, I want you to know that the staff recommended to Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission that the Oregon spot prawn trawl permits be converted to trap permits by 2004. And it was based on several factors. Again, I have the citation. Trawl gear has much higher bycatch rates than traps. The Pacific Fishery Management Council has encouraged disallowing trawl gear for spot prawn fishing due to those bycatch concerns. Trawl habitat damage, particularly of deep water coral and sponge habitats, is of serious concern. A need to be consistent with PFMC action limiting trawl foot rope size in order to reduce habitat damage in important areas to juvenile rockfish is also of concern. Trawl gear is selectively biased towards the smaller male prawns, which may jeopardize the long-term productivity of those Oregon prawn populations. And increased trawl pressure in Oregon as a result at what could result from the Washington closure. So first Washington moved to close, then Oregon moved to close. Before Washington and Oregon, Alaska closed the fishery, and British Columbia 10 years ago closed their fishery. So this is it. We're stuck with California as the last fishery. I just want that as a background basis for you to know that that has already happened. And again, I can give you those citations. The other thing I really wanted to remind you of, and I know you know this, but the Marine Life Management Act is the law that manages our fisheries here in California, and it clearly states that sustainability is the primary fishery management goal. And the principle of sustainability encompasses the continuous replacement of the resources, as well as maintaining the biological diversity and securing the fullest possible range of economic, social, and ecological benefits. To achieve this goal, the MLMA requires that fisheries be managed to limit bycatch to acceptable types and amounts, base decisions on the best available scientific information, and maintain the health of marine fishery habitat and rebuild depressed fisheries. And we supported your previous efforts to reduce bycatch and minimize habitat destruction. As noted in your findings with respect to the coon stripe shrimp fishery, restricting fishing gear to traps only is expected to reduce bycatch, and fish and invertebrate species incidentally caught in traps can usually be released alive and unharmed. This restriction will also avoid the potential damage to coastal habitat associated with fishing with trawl nets by prohibiting their use in this fishery. So this was recognized in another fishery, another similar fishery. So I guess what I'm asking for you to do today is close this fishery, do a phase out, do a conversion. We're willing to work, go back to the table and figure out the best way to go about that conversion, but the fishery does need to be closed. Thank you very much.
Tim Eichenberg, followed by Randy Fry.
Commissioners, my name is Tim Eichenberg. I'm with Oceana, which is an international environmental organization dedicated to preserving ocean resources. We're a brand new organization, and I'm their representative in San Francisco. We've submitted letters for the record on August 24th, September 19th, and October 9th, and we tried to testify in San Luis Obispo and Monterey. You changed the item on the agenda in San Luis, so we had to jump off the plane while it was still on the runway because we wouldn't have made that item on the agenda. And in Monterey, you've heard that that hearing was postponed, so we're very glad you did not continue this hearing and heard from the members of the public about their concerns. And we're here again today to urge the commission to follow the lead in Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and British Columbia and convert the spot prawn trawl fishery to a trap fishery to protect fishing and fishing communities. The department's July 2002 observer report notes that there's significant bycatch in the trawl fishery, not only for overfished rockfish, but also for whiting, lingcod, and other overfished species as well. The observer data shows there's about 8 to 18 pounds of non-targeted fish, not including invertebrates, that are taken for every pound of prawns in the spot prawn trawl fishery. The industry disputes these statistics and the science in compiling the observer data, but the figures in the report are comparable to bycatch data that was gathered in the 80s and 90s. And the fact remains that of that 86 observed tows from 9 vessels took about 36,000 pounds of rockfish, in addition sand dabs, hake, sole, and other fish as bycatch, which does not even include the invertebrates and the habitat damage that's caused by this kind of fishery. And even if these bycatch numbers were off by half, they would still be excessive and unsustainable. As the National Academy of Sciences noticed, bycatch is not the only problem with bottom trawling. Bottom trawling destroys habitat in high-relief, hard-bottom areas, which are essential to fish and other marine life, especially rockfish. These impacts are not addressed by the use of fish excluder devices. Closure of the trawl fishery is required under the Fish and Game Code Section 8830 to conform to federal ground fish regulations. As Karen Rain has noted, the closure is also required under the Marine Life Protection Act, Sections 7050, 7056, and 7084, to conserve marine ecosystems, reduce bycatch, and minimize damage to habitat. Similar problems with other fisheries, with other bottom trawl fisheries, such as pink shrimp, sea cucumber, and halibut, does not justify the continuation of this destructive bottom trawl fishery. Moreover, there are alternatives. With bycatch rates 50 to 80 times lower than the trawl fishery, this spot prawn trap fishery is clearly preferable and more sustainable. Oceana therefore urges the commission to maintain the trap spot prawn fishery but close the trawl fishery in accordance with option 4A in your staff recommendation. Thank you.
You.
Randy Fry, followed by Bob Strickland.
I give my time to Bob.
Okay.
I'm pinching myself. I'm in a major batting slump here. I got a question. LB, let me catch you before you retire. Over here. If the OY of 20 metric tons of bocaccio this year, if it is exceeded, the recreational our season does not open, right? If it's exceeded before July 1st,
I'm sorry. Let me just back up just a second here. The 20 metric tons that was established as a ceiling on Boccaccio impact this year by the National Marine Fisheries Service is a limit, an upper limit on a sustainability harvest level. Even with the 11 tons that we're estimating right now of Boccaccio impact from the fisheries as bycatch, that will not provide for rebuilding of Boccaccio. It's just going to hold the line. It's not going to rebuild the stock. Any upward movement in that allow of that Boccaccio catch is going to just further exacerbate the chances of rebuilding the population. The basic rebuilding level for Boccaccio is zero. It's not 20. It's zero. What we've attempted to do with the Calcod or the conservation areas, all the restrictions that you have, is to minimize the impacts of fisheries on Boccaccio. But it's not going to rebuild it.
Is there a certain point that the recreational fishery, which is supposed to open up for groundfish, which is supposed to open up July 1st, might not open due to the excess of catch of Boccaccio?
I can't give you a yes or no on that, because this is a really we're in a whole new area here with regard to rebuilding of populations. We had, when we set the rebuilding parameters up and the rebuilding regulations, we never anticipated a situation like this. I can't answer that question because it would be a very serious consideration by the National Marine Fisheries Service as what to do about it. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're going with the preseason estimates, the expectation that the recreational fishery is going to be within the 5 tons, that spot prawn trawl is going to zero, and that all the other fisheries will add up to, I think, basically 6 tons. And that's all bycatch.
So another question. If the spot prawn trawl, if they don't catch zero Boccaccio, then it's taken out of the recreational OY, right?
No.
I mean, explain this to me.
We're in a very soft area of management here. Again, the Council and National Marine Fisheries Service are trying as best they can to provide for fisheries as best they can while minimizing bycatch of Boccaccio in these fisheries. And I can't say where the line's going to be drawn as far as any further fishery closures. If, for example, the Commission decided to do nothing here and the National Marine Fisheries Service might have to reexamine its regulations, but I can't say what that examination would result in.
Thank you. Well, speaking on behalf of the Recreational Fishing Alliance, which formerly was the Nearshore Chapter of United Anglers of Southern California, and we originally asked for the observer data to be released, and we appreciate, Commissioner Flores in Fresno this last year that ordered the department to release the data, and that's what has brought us here. I love shrimp. I do love shrimp, and we can't go out and spearfish it, and we can't catch it with a rod and reel. So I am for a commercial fishery that is sustainable, that has zero, or would most have zero bycatch, which would be the trap. I mean, we can't take the chance of the recreational fishery not even opening up July 1st due to exceeding the Boccaccio OY. So we would ask the commission to have them switch to trap gear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob Strickland.
Make good, Bob, because you're closing.
Thank you. I'm Bob Strickland with United Anglers of California. I've sat here today and listened to Mr. New and the fishermen with trepidation because I don't know enough about this fishery to give you data, which I'm not good at anyway. But after what Randy said and what else we've talked about with LB as far as zero bycatch, I don't hear that they can guarantee that. So given that, I would like to see it switched to traps, that the trawl be stopped. Because like Randy said, it may affect us as far as us even getting on the water. LB, this came up before Randy's question, and I was told, and I don't know if it was from you or for whom, that the commercial data wasn't going to be collected to the end of the year after the fishery closed, and our data would be collected as we fish. So that no matter if 20 tons were caught, it's not going to be known until the end of the year, so that we would open no matter what. Is that true?
I'm looking for a respond to Mr. Strickland. And the question is, in-season monitoring of bococcio and other overfish species impacts. And there will be in-season monitoring of the recreational fishery through the RecFin program or the federal sport fish program. That will be in-season.
Right.
As far as the commercial fisheries that are being observed through the NIMS observer program, those data will not be available till after the season. So it'll be a post-season analysis in terms of the commercial data.
So given that, the commercials would not affect us opening and being able to fish till we got ROI?
Not. The response is this year, I would have no expectation of any in-season management based on commercial.
Okay.
But that does not say that there wouldn't be some adjustments next year if the postseason analysis indicated that we're having higher impacts than we're estimating preseason this year. Otherwise, it could change things next year.
So it's kind of a crapshoot this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Barbara?
LB or Christine?
I guess what the department would like to say about the bycatch report is that we recognized in the report that it is not random, that our sampling was not random. That doesn't invalidate everything we did. And any bycatch study is going to vary by area, by boat, by season. So we recognize that there's going to be variability, and even a perfectly random study could not eliminate bias. I would also say that as far as lengths and weights, in some cases we did take lengths because that is the industry standard when you're on a boat and it's rocking and you can't get an accurate weight, and we have length weight relationship, so you can go to a chart and say if it's this length, it's this size. So we did take lengths because it was the more accurate measurement. Also, I would say I'm not sure where Mr. New is getting his data, but Table 11 shows 236 bococcio taken in Northern California and 13 taken in Southern California. So I don't know where the numbers were, but in our table, we show we counted this many fish. The size range of these fish varied greatly. And I guess what we would say is, again, when you talk about a hard grade excluder, the data that they looked at in the pink shrimp fishery said it was successful excluding adult fish. All the fish that are encountered out there are not adult fish. And so no one really knows in this fishery, the spot prawn fishery, what the effect of a grate would be on the bycatch level of bococcio or other groundfish species. Also, the roller gear is an issue. a major issue because most of these vessels are using large roller gear, and that allows them to get into rocky areas where we have more rockfish encountered.
What happens when that roller gear goes in when they're in these high relief areas, which I, as I understand is where most of the sprout pond are, that they're trawling? What happens to the habitat in that area with this kind of trawl gear? Do we know?
Well, it's heavy. And whatever is on the rock, and obviously nothing's going to give, so if you're on the bottom and something heavy comes down on you, I mean, we don't have the data. That's one of the issues, is we don't have habitat data to tell you the effect of roller gear. All we can say is that the large roller gear has allowed trawl vessels into rocky areas where there is more interaction with rockfish.
To the mic.
They're tires. They're wheels off of vehicles.
Okay.
So as a agriculture person yourself, and you drive tractors over rocks, what happens?
Mm-hmm. Tears up tires.
Tears up tires too. Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think that Kate Wing gave a good discussion of what's happened with the spot prawn in other states. It's a very small number of fishermen, but the trawling has been phased out. One of the reasons why another thing they phased out was because trawling usually precludes trapping in a certain area. But it's important to realize in California that every area that is trawled is not necessarily good for trapping, because obviously a trawl can cover a large expanse. So that's one of our problems in conversion, is we don't know exactly how much area will be available for trappers if you eliminate trawlers. Do you have anything else, LB?
It was brought up, and I just have the commissioners refer to Exhibit 7. There was comments about letters that we received on this item. Towards the end of your exhibit, you'll see that there's two different types of letters, form letters that we received. We received 1,324 copies, and the other one 583 copies.
Yeah. LB, tell me, we hear regularly about the critical stage that Picacho is in coastwide. Is there general agreement among the fishing and scientific community that the species itself is in serious jeopardy? I mean, I don't know who else to ask that question, but I think, quite frankly, it's very relevant to the discussion we're having today. I keep hearing it, but I also keep hearing anecdotal information that's not as bad as other people are saying. So, I mean, I kind of want to kind of get contextual comment here. So,
we've gone through this discussion several times, not only here but in the council arena, and I know there's a lot of concerns about the data that went into the stock assessment. It is what we have. It's not as comprehensive, I'm talking about the data, as we would like it. I don't think there's any doubt in people's mind that there's a high availability of Bacacho south of Point Conception.
Right.
But I don't hear that so much north of Point Conception. And the habitat goes all the way to Cape Mendocino.
What about the age classes? I think it's important.
We've got a couple of year classes that appear to be strong, and the relative strength of those year classes is critical in terms of projecting the recovery.
Right.
And until we can get a better index of that year class, we're sort of in a best estimate mode about that recruitment strength. In the models, there's an assumption about how strong that population is, and it's very critical in terms of projecting the recovery, how high that bar is on the graph. Now, the author is planning to complete another assessment, I believe, by the fall of next year. Of course, that doesn't help the fishermen right now, but he's committed to doing that, and we'll look at new information or what new information there is. But in discussions with him, and he has told folks that, yeah, it may be that bar may be a little bit higher than we previously thought, but don't expect any dramatic difference in the outcome in terms of what the assessment of the stock is. He does not want to lead people to believe that all of a sudden it's fishing as usual because of any new information that may be input at this point.
Mr. President, may I respond to the department? Since the department had two opportunities to speak, may I speak briefly to that rebuttal?
Actually, Ilson, let us do our deliberating in public here, and if we have some questions, we'll ask you.
Well, as a matter of fairness, I should be allowed to.
You know what? You presented your case very well, and trust me. I think take a seat, and we'll, if we need you.
Well, let me at least add then, as far as this foot rope matter, is that we will make the same offer
well
with any foot rope or any design trawl the department wants.
Okay. Thank you. LB, I'm going to throw out some what I'd like to see. And then I want you to respond to me, if you will. Sort of the impact, and also you haven't addressed the fact that they're pushed out to 150 fathoms, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. So, all right. Here are some of the things that I'd like to see. A moratorium on new permits. Mr. New and his group have offered to pay for a new observer program, so I'd like to see a new observer program, mandatory on all boats. With a new study, new data, all the gear restrictions that are recommended on here, and item number 6, taking the season down to a half season, peer review. What does that do? Tell me sort of what does that leave us?
Okay, the first issue, moratorium on permits, then that would say that you're not proposing to ban trawling. And that was consistent with the recommendation we've had all along, is if you go that way, be a moratorium on the permits. Right. Observer program, we got a major funding issue here about how you're going to do it. And we've also got staffing issues. And
They're offering to pay for it, though.
Okay. I think as we did with the gentleman with regard to the traps, that somebody to sponsor such a program, full observer coverage. But now when you say observer program, there's a couple of thoughts here. First of all, when fishing, and 150 observers would be required. So that's one thing. Now, if you're talking about fishing within the conservation zone, now you're getting into a federal permit. And you wouldn't have any authority in that particular zone. So that would be contingent upon, the industry would have to approach the National Marine Fisheries Service for such a permit. So you wouldn't be involved in that, but, yeah, it's an exempted fishing permit. But what I heard you said that any trawling then for spot prawn would require observers on board. And so there would a need for some, if they would, in regulation there, I'm not sure how we do this. Without a funding mechanism or something built into the regulations about, I'm thinking out loud here.
No, that's fine. That's
we could, for example, require NIMP certified observers on board the vessels when spot prawn trawling. I think that would work. The gear restrictions, outside of, are you talking about small foot rope requirement?
Small roller gear, hard grade excluder.
That could certainly be put in the regulations, but as an observation, it would greatly curtail their fishing even outside of 150. But we could certainly put that in the regulations. A season length, half a season?
Yeah, I don't know if that makes a difference. I mean, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get a look at some additional data, some additional independent data. And then Mr. New and his group will have to live with that data. If it proves that the department's data was correct, then I'm sure he'll agree with us that shutting down the trawling industry is warranted.
The season currently is February through October, I believe.
Is there a prime better months than there are others, or?
Weather's worse than that. Spring.
The spring is the worst part, or?
Weather-wise, yeah.
Probably on the.
Yeah, I know.
If it were on the, for example,
or you can tell me,
month.
LB, I mean, you can tell me no, just go ahead, you know, withdraw that part and all the other.
I'm not sure how, if that's been noticed. Is that within the.
Well,
it's
the seasonal closure 6 months, so. Broke hand that one
up. Is that option?
It's an option. Option seven.
What is noticed now that.
What's noticed now is the closure would be from September 1 through the last day in February. So if we'd modified that, we may have to go out to an additional, at least a 20-day, or excuse me, at least a 15-day notice, if not a full 45.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly delaying the opening of the season would give us some time to ramp this up,
right,
and the industry as well.
Right.
One of the things that, you know, I'm kind of liking the direction here, but I have to say, I am not yet convinced, and I really want to be convinced that this fishery doesn't do significant habitat damage to the bottom, where particularly in the areas where you're fishing, where you're trawling in steep rocky areas. Intuitively, it would tell me there's significant damage that takes place. Now, I'd like to be proven wrong. I really would in this process. So, you know, you don't need to answer me now. But you just need to understand where I'm particularly coming from. I am not yet convinced that every time one of these nets runs over this area that there's not significant habitat damage. And that's got to be a concern of ours. How we weigh that, again, we have that's still open for debate, it seems to me. But it seems to me that continues to be a critical issue that we've got to weigh here.
That peer review and peer review. I think that was the other thing I asked for. It's not listed there.
That would be in terms of the observer data.
Right.
And we might be able to tie this in somehow with the existing NIMS observer program if NIMS approved observers are used, and maybe talked to Liz Clark up in Northwest Region about tying the analysis in with their ongoing analysis.
Okay. What about the issue of, is the issue of moving towards a trap conversion, is that come, that would come after we get this information in? Is that, is that your point here?
I believe on the conversion, did Christine speak to some a possible regulatory initiative about some options for conversion? Sorry, I missed it. Maybe we can just refresh our memory.
We asked for more time because what has been advertised is a package that just creates a Tier 3 trap permit for trawlers. And it has landing requirements that would let in a certain number of trawlers, designates it non-transferable. It doesn't say anything to trap restrictions, area restrictions. Obviously, they'd have to obey the same season. So it was incomplete when you look at it as a viable option now. So that's why we felt we had to go back and do it, because you've got an incomplete program now.
The point is, we're not ready for it right now.
That's true.
Okay. All right. Thanks. From a depth standpoint, you say we're out at 150 feet already?
Right.
South of Point Reyes and 250 feet north? Is that
the, the conservation area, the Rockfish Conservation Area, south of Point Reyes, but will be basically from 20 to 150 fathoms, no trawling, except there's some, there's a couple of exceptions for flatfish trawling using small foot rope. But otherwise, under the federal regulations, outside of 150, they can use their traditional gear. But that applies to all the trawl fisheries. It's for deep water rockfish, for sable fish, and so forth. They can still use the large roller gear outside of 150. South of Conception, in the conservation zone, there's a provision in the federal regulations for trawling out to 100 fathoms using small foot rope, and that would guide the fishery under the federal regulations. So basically, what you're doing here is not banning the fishery. The federal regulations will control it in the conservation zone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're basically saying, go ahead with the fishery.
Mm-hmm.
But you take observers. NEMPS approve observers at all time when spot prawn are taken.
Mm-hmm.
Gear restrictions, you specified hard grade excluder, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you also said small foot rope. Did you mean that?
It's not listed here. Can we do that? It's not listed here. Can we do that? Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that just is a comment for the industry. That is a major change in the way they fish. And then as for the season length, it's an eight-month season now. If you cut it in half, that would be 4 months. That would say July, August, September, October. That would coincide with the trap fishery reopening, I believe.
8 months now.
It's eight now.
If we cut it in half, it'd be four.
Right.
Well, what we'll do is we'll cut it. It's not, what does February cut it to?
9 months now.
9 months now. It cuts it down to?
Six.
6 months.
Okay.
Joe?
Mr. President, members of the commission,
Joe Blum, National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA Fisheries. As I understand what is being discussed, is that, that under the item that you have that you're having a discussion with LB on, there would be a trawl fishery of some magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
I realize this is a state decision and it's your decision, and I am not attempting to do anything but to inform you. I'm unaware that we have any surplus observers that would be available. That is not to say that we absolutely do not, but I am unaware. Our budget situation is not that much better than yours. We don't have a budget. You have one that is a problem. We won't have one until probably late January, early February, and no one knows what it's going to be because the only mark we have at the moment is a Senate mark, and it's from a previously constituted Senate that has now changed parties, and they do not want to work from that mark. And so they want to look at the whole thing again, and we did not do very well in that. So you need to be aware that, that we do not have a surplus of resources that I am aware of to get into this. The second thing, there have been two decisions made with some reliance on a no-trawl spot prawn fishery. One is our decision that listing Boccaccio was not warranted. And the other was a whole bunch of seasons set by the Pacific Fisheries Management Council that had as an understanding that there would be no bycatch of Boccaccio associated with the fishery that you're talking about. Those two decisions, particularly the not warranted decision, would likely have to be revisited based on what we might and now have to anticipate as some level of bycatch. Again, I don't want to say that it would flip our decision one way or the other, or that the Pacific Council decision would be flipped one way or the other, but you should make any decision you make cognizant of the fact that there might be those consequences, and you need to have that in your mind. And again, our resources are limited.
Joe, I understand the second point you made, but the first point relative to availability of available observers. So I gather what you're saying, your observers, the observers that you have now are already involved in other observer programs, obviously.
Yes.
And there are no plans to bring in other observers?
I am unaware of any. No.
Okay.
The key. So if you are relying on a participation by us, you need to be aware that that may or may not be present, and I'm not in a position to commit it.
Yeah. Joe brings up a good point. If I wasn't clear, it's NIMS-certified observers. We wouldn't expect the National Marine Fisheries Service to provide.
Oh.
It's a contracting mechanism.
Oh, so there are
private companies that provide observers that have to meet NIMS standards. And there is a possibility of tapping into that existing contract that we have, for example, for some of our observers. But there's going to be some upfront money, if you will, in order to get some specific, to get the observers necessary to cover the fishery. But that would be up to the industry to work out those kind of neat details. In the regulations, we would likely just specify that NIMS certified observers are required on board the vessels at all time. And I didn't mean to imply the goodness of your heart that you would do this. But the only thing I would ask perhaps to tie into NIMS is that the data collection is consistent with the NIMS observer program so that it could be fed into their analytical process.
Okay.
That was when you mentioned Liz Clark, Dr. Clark's name, you also got my attention because I don't know that any discussions. Have you had a discussion with her about whether this would be a good idea? Because I don't know that we can, I don't want you to make a decision based on an assumption that we can do more than we can do.
Can you analyze the data that we provide you?
I can't answer that. I don't know what we'll get.
Okay.
I mean, this is a different situation than we walked into.
Right. Bob? Bob. Yes.
I was just going to point out that what we have noticed now regarding the Observer program is that the Observer program, all vessels landing spot prawns taken by trawl must cooperate with the federal or department fishery observers or observers collecting data for the department when asked to carry and accommodate an observer on fishing trips at no charge to the sponsoring agency. If that meets your goal of requiring the industry to pay for those observers or not, we may have to add some clarifying language.
This is going a little bit beyond that. That's just for cooperation.
Right.
If we walk up to you and say we want to go out on your boat, that's cooperation.
Right.
What I hear you saying is specifying that NIMS observers, certified observers, will be on the spot prawn vessels at all times.
Absolutely. Right.
That's a different proposition.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that's even noticed here.
That's not noticed.
I was reading what was noticed.
And I'm not sure that that's what the industry's saying that they're willing to furnish either.
Well, I mean, those are some of the – actually, Mr. New, can you come forward so we can address some – I want to make sure that what I'm proposing here is something that you folks feel that you can live up to. Otherwise, I'm not willing to support this. But, I mean, it's going to take a great deal of effort on your part in terms of financially to come forward. And we don't have a great deal of time. So.
Now, just before he starts, so I have a better understanding of who he's representing. Is there an association or something you represent, or is it just a handful of the?
No, it's virtually all. I think there are 20 active spot prawn trawlers, and I represent all of them, but there may be 24 that have made a landing of 1 pound in the last 2 years. I don't know. I can't speak to that, but I represent.
In the neighborhood of 20.
20 to 22, 20
to
25. Correct. And I represent 2021.
The active permits.
Yes.
Okay.
When we, I want to make sure that I better ask my client. I understood that we were volunteering all of the vessels, all of the crews, all of the gear, including the trawls, of course, all of the fuel, and all of the food.
No, wait. What we're asking here is not that. We're asking for NIMS certified observers.
Oh, I thought the question was from President Flores was what are we offering? So I misunderstood.
We know what you're offering. I mean, you've written it down.
Right.
All right.
The issue here is NIMS certified observers on all boats.
All right.
Okay.
In order to collect data so we can come up with. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I understand. And I don't know how much that costs, so I probably cannot intelligently or validly answer it, if that's the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the question.
I don't know what the cost is.
Does the department have any idea? Can they give us an idea on a per-trip basis?
She's got it.
Okay, go ahead.
Let her have the mic.
Go ahead. Go to the net where Ilson is.
Okay. I contacted our Northern California coordinator of the ground fish sampling program and asked him for some information on this. He said that the observer cost $90,000 for 6 months for three observers, or $4,100 a month for everything, including their training or equipment. I mean, because if you're going fishing every day, you've got to have somebody on duty every day. And a lot of these trips, they go out multiple days.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a minor undertaking. He said his Half Moon Bay sampler makes a minimum of $3,400 a month, base salary of $2,400 plus $83 per day for sea pay with 12 sea days guaranteed. They also have to attend the NIMS training course, which is 2 weeks, and the training is only offered on irregular. It's not offered every week by National Marine Fisheries Service. Maybe Mr. Blum could answer that, but I'm under the understanding that their training program only occurs once or twice a year. So we're talking, it's very expensive. And that's why we didn't consider it a viable option for such a small fishery.
All right.
Well, first, we would probably, I think, talk. We should talk to our constituents to see if they can raise, if they have this much money available. The other note I would make is that the department's report, they felt confident in using 17 plus 72 tows, which was not every day, which was not for 6 months. And I think it... In the interest of fairness and non-discrimination, I think that perhaps the same number of observations might be fair. I don't either that or require the department to redo their report.
You mean what you're suggesting is that maybe as a back off as an observer on every one of those tows, the 170? Is that what you're saying?
No, the department did I think 17 in Southern California and 72 or 73, 74 was it, Ebley, in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And
the tow a day? Do you do one tow? Is that how it works out, or is there
no? Like 5 or 6 tows a day.
Okay.
All right.
And I understand that. Maybe I don't understand correctly, but I understand Ms. Barsky is suggesting every day.
No.
She was giving
us an idea as to what the cost would be.
All right.
On a daily basis.
And it looks
so
like
have
that's
to be prorated.
Yeah. I mean, that's not going to be economically feasible. That's what I'm hearing. So I'm just trying to get like you. A much better idea. I want more data. I'd like a clean slate of data. And so I thought, well, why not just have an observer on every single day? But that doesn't look like it's economically feasible. So what I'd like to do is do something more than what the department did. So we need to come up with some sort of consensus on what's a fair amount. Do we want to make it days or do we want to make it toes? So it's a six-month season. Out of that 6 months of the we're giving you, potentially, how many days do you think you'd be on the water?
We don't have any observers. Just a guess. Yeah,
just a rough guess.
An educated guess. I mean,
well, you can't do that.
Days a month anyway.
Okay. Mr. Flores?
Yes. Yep.
90 days.
90 days over 6 months? Is that what it is? Okay.
Toby. A comment, when you sign up for observers, you sign a contract for a period of time because it's very expensive to train them. There's upfront cost for equipment. And when we, for example, when we contract with the observer program, we have them on for 4 or 5 months, and it's specified in the contract, and you pay them whether they go to sea or not. They have to be there when you're ready to go fishing. I know it's very expensive. We have a couple of programs now, but we have the observers contracted up front for a period of time, and they will get paid whether we go fishing or not.
Well, that seems commercially logical. I mean, I would expect that they wouldn't stand around for no pay and to wait to be called. But is the department, I just want to understand this clearly, is the department going to contribute anything to the observers? I mean, it's their report that we can prove is defective. I mean, surely they should be interested in the matter of fairness.
Well, wait a minute. That's only your opinion. Now, they feel like their report's pretty accurate,
uh-huh.
And it's up to you.
Yeah, we're putting the onus back on you so you can disprove their facts. So,
but I meant the report itself based upon Dr. Rice's and Dr. Rich's analysis. Ms. Barsky was admitted that there was a certain bias, and that's exactly why they should have had an assessment of uncertainty.
We get that, but we're trying to come up with some sort of formula here that works. Who's our top statistician on the department that's here right now? LB, it's you.
I just want to point out that our top statistician did work on this.
Okay, no.
And I guess we...
I have some figures I want to throw out, so I want to get some ideas to what would be good numbers. From my understanding, we have, let's say, 22 vessels here, 90 days of fishing. So what would be significantly...
11 vessels.
Where could we, what would it take to get some scientifically valid data in terms of trips?
Well, I'm trying to think. The National Marine Fisheries Service in their observer program has a sampling goal of, I believe, about 10%.
Okay.
And I'm just going to throw that one out as from my recollection of the design of that program.
I'm unqualified to comment. So. Well, I don't know that much about statistics.
How about 20 days on the water, then? 20 trips.
Are you looking at me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
You mean 20 observer days on the water?
Multiple times.
You know, we agree to that. I don't say that with any authority. That is to say intellectual authority. But we agree to that.
I would like to see it on a multitude of boats. Not
just No. I've marked 11 boats.
How many boats should there be?
Let's do half.
Well, we need a statistician, I suppose, to tell us.
You need to help us here because if you don't help us come to some conclusions, we're liable to go in different directions.
I'm trying to help.
We're asking for some help.
How about half of them?
Well, okay, let's do 25 days and half the boats.
Okay. Sonky?
And 50% of the boats.
Yep.
As a formerly practicing scientist, I beg some mercy here. You cannot produce a right answer for number of samples. The sampling rate depends a little bit on the data, actually, as you go out and start gathering it. Because information for the commissioners, what you don't want to do is arbitrarily provide Ilsa New an opportunity to criticize another report because we've inadvertently statistically created a bomb. What I'm saying is I would hate to say, here's how many samples we need to collect, have them go out there, and then later the statisticians go and say, well, wait a minute, that wasn't enough. And we've invested a lot of time and energy and not added to our understanding and knowledge of what's going on out there. Unfortunately, long story short here, is you can't calculate the number of samples you're going to be needing here. That's where you need a professional to look at some data, probably do some pre-sampling, and then develop a sampling protocol to actually get at what I think you're after. Right. So I really caution you to decide.
I don't disagree with you. I want to set a minimum. Okay, so these are just minimums. And given the fact of what I know in terms of days and vessel size, I can assure you that's more than enough in terms of sampling. Not as a former scientist, but as a student who took 3 years of statistics. So there's plenty of sample material there. But I don't disagree with you.
What? I have a suggestion, considering the scientific barrier here. Could this matter be continued? We will have two scientists, Dr. Rice and Dr. Rich, do the statistical mumbo-jumbo. I'm sure they'd like that. Mumbo-jumbo, and come up with some statistically valid number, submit it to you, and you can have a telephone meeting on that.
Well, I fully anticipate at this point that in our February meeting that this is going to come up again. So, and I think that we're going to have to go to notice and probably have a telephone call in order to adopt these some of these measures because they're not noticed here. But in the meantime, this gives you some time to get together. One is your financing and your scientists to come back and report to us. And
all right.
We'll extend, because currently, if we go based on what I've asked for here, the season won't start until at the end of February, correct?
February 1st.
Right. So that gives
us how do we logically get something in place by the start of the season? I guess that's my problem.
You don't.
Oh, no.
Okay.
For informational purposes only, you must be currently aware that we're in the process of downsizing Marine Division through these budget reductions.
Right.
And we have a lot of fisheries you commissioners have made decisions on. We are not going to be able to deliver what we've already been tasked with. So, you know, you hand this to us to draft something. It requires staffing time, and some other fishery very dear to your hearts is going to fall off the end of the table. I mean, it is really dire straits. And like Mr. Blum pointed out, we don't have any of these people. We don't have a program right now. Not that we don't want to, just I just want you to be aware we are really stretched thin.
We realize that, but that's why the onus is on them to come up with the funding. If they have no funding source, then it's not going to happen. We have the ability to, you know, change course if we have to. So I know it seems insurmountable at this point, but I think that they're willing to do what they have to do.
I think we need a timeout here.
Do I have to go to my room?
The commission will not meet again till February, and there's an obvious need to develop a study plan, and we're not going to do it here today. But we are concerned about opening this fishery February 1st, yep. And we would, you know.
But that's one of my. We're not going to open February 1st. We're going to push it beyond.
If we could somehow give us a timeout for the industry to develop a study plan to bring back to the commission. At the very least, delay the opening of the season or until July to give them time to put this all together.
Mr. President.
That's what I have.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Kennedy.
If I might, the fundamental problem here is we only have certain very specific language that's been noticed for today's proceeding. We either hew to that or we abandon it. If we abandon it altogether, then we have to start the whole process over again with 45 days' notice, additional hearings, and additional language and amendments. We can adopt some of what's there today and ignore other pieces and at least get part of your program in the process for today. As Mr. Traynor pointed out, there are some things that we can fine-tune if you wanted to and do a 15-day notice, but that, again, presupposes we're going to meet before February. We can go with other directions and then, again, start all over as well. My suggestion, perhaps based upon your comments and what we have currently noticed, is several of the pieces of what we currently have noticed can be adopted today, including one of the proposals, which was in option, I believe, 7. Let me take a look. Seasonal. Which does put in a time limit. Option 7 included a seasonal closure, which suggests that the season will now be from essentially the last day of February to the first day of September, or actually the last day of August, I think. If you were to adopt that today, that would at least give you some additional time with the season not opening until after February, and that would give you some additional time. Because what you're proposing with this study is going to require some significant alterations.
Could I stop you right there? What would that do? I mean, the end of February, what would that do to the workload? I mean, would we be realistically ready to make some decisions by the end of February?
No.
Okay.
What?
Okay.
Let me ask you. What are the better months for fishing for you folks?
For me, you know, I can only speak for myself, yeah. The last part of the season.
Which is?
The last 3 months of the season, like ending in
October, November, December.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
October.
Yeah.
So if we move the season,
if the season we took, now closes at the end of October.
Right.
October
can
would
we do,
be my best month. Of the
can
year.
We not?
Mr. President, if we choose to move the season, we're going to. The only language we have right now is essentially a March 1 to August 31st season language. If we want to move it someplace else, we would have
so
to
re-notice
language.
So we can't move that 6 months anywhere we want.
No, sir. Currently, we only had exact language for wording in the statute in the proposed regulation.
Mr. Flores?
Okay. What?
Just a suggestion. You proceed with banning the fishery. Ask the industry to develop its study plan. When we all agree to the study plan, you can reconsider filing notice to reopen it.
I'm not willing to do that. And I'll tell you why. Because we have a tendency in government to shut things down and never reopen them. Or increasing people's taxes and never taking the taxes down to where they were. So I'm not willing to do that. What I'm willing to do
is... Yeah, but Michael, in reality, if we don't open the season, we're shutting the fishery down.
I mean, if we sit here and say we don't want to open the season until we come back, that's in essence what we're doing. We're shutting the fishery down until we come back.
Well, no, because it wouldn't be a closure.
What?
It wouldn't be a closure.
It wouldn't be a closure. It would be a postponement. There's a difference.
Yeah. Look, how about if we shut the season down, come back. What I'd like to do is open it the latter part, the last 6 months of the season. That gives us time to then come up with your funding source for the observer program, for the new study. It gives the department some time to sort of figure out their plan of action. Can we do that, Bill?
Procedurally, we'd have to re-notice it to shut it down and take it up in February.
Mr. President and Mr. Flores and Mr. Christmas both, as it currently stands, all we've got noticed is unfortunately just, well, and actually it's backwards. What we're suggesting is that that's essentially it's going to be closed from September 1st through the last day of February. That suggests that it's going to be open from the 1st of March through the end of August. We could do a 15-day notice to change those months and then have some special meeting between now and the 1st of February to adopt that. We could also adopt that language now and at our February meeting have already noticed the possibility that we're going to change that once again.
Okay.
So that we could move that. That would at least get us to February, our February meeting, which is February 6th, 5th, and 6th, I believe.
Right.
With the season still closed and with an opportunity then to consider additional dates. So we could have essentially a running change on this. I can tell you that you'll drive your staff nuts because the problem is as you adopt some of these regulations, by law, we are required to go ahead and process these forward to the Office of Administrative Law for further consideration and incorporation in our new regulations. And what you'll have then is a running series of amendments that were going to be coming in the door right behind your already adopted language. If Mr. Traynor goes on strike, I'll understand why. But it is possible you can do this. That will at least give you some additional time. I would suggest, however, that you, in all practicality, you must be careful because what is being discussed here is a much more elaborate and aggressive proposal for doing studies that may take a significant period of time to develop, and I'm not sure how much time you can buy yourself.
Yeah, the only thing I'm willing to support today, I'm not willing to support, particularly given the last discussion, the only thing I'm willing to support today is how we get to making sure that the fishery does not open at the prescribed period that we're at today, and then come back to us with a discussion of the rest of this in the context of an observer program and the rest of it. That's all I'm... Folks, that's all I'm willing to support today if we're going to make some changes. I'm not willing, I will not vote for any of the rest of this because, quite frankly, I think it's more important if we're going to really going to look at an observer program. There's a lot of this, the rest of this stuff that I think will may move and change as a result of some scientific data that we're going to take. So the only thing I'm willing to support is some way to get us to a closure so that we don't open March 1st. Go into June 1st or whatever date we decide, and then give us this 6 months period to take a look at what we're doing. That's all I'm willing to go for today.
So. Yes, sir.
I'm going to ask the commissioner. This fishery's been going on for 50 years, and there's still plenty of prawns.
We're not here to argue that.
What I'm here to ask you is to just adopt a great small foot rope and allow us time to come back to the commission and set up within a prescribed period of time this observer program to come up with.
I don't disagree. Okay, where are we now? Okay, give us a moment, please.
We need to hear from the department. What would be a reasonable thing?
Okay. Where's? Oh, you're over there.
Want me back there?
Yeah. Oh. Hey, you can sit right. Hey, you're moving up.
Come on down.
Oh.
Do you understand kind of where we want to go, Bill? And so sort of if you could, or and the department can chime in at this point. We want to keep the fisheries closed. We want to know what is the next reasonable date for opening. Is it July 1st or and how do we get there and still adopt these gear restrictions and some of the things that I've already mentioned? Okay.
Mr. President, Bill Cunningham again. In looking at this, I think the most we can do today we can do a couple of things. We can take no action at all today. Which means everything slides into our February meeting or to a specially set meeting in January. Or today, at least, we have before us option 7, which does have a change in seasonal timing. We could adopt that would have the season not open until essentially March 1st. We could then notify or do the full public notice of an additional amendment to the regulation. And I think we're going to have to do a 45-day, not a 15, because I'm sorry, this is going to have a significant change in impact.
Okay.
We could do a 45-day notice as quickly as your staff could generate one. You could ask us to go to notice as quickly as staff can generate one. I think we can get a 45-day notice. Can we get one for our February meeting right now? I think we're past that window. So we would have to be looking at something in late February, perhaps a specially set meeting in late February, where we would then consider language that would let us roll this same provision over to where the season would then not open until July 1, or whatever other date you wished us to look at. And again, as Mr. Traynor indicates, our 45-day notice, I think it's going to be required, and I think we're past the window to do it for our February meeting already.
All right. And, okay. So you know what to do? Do you want to make a motion from here?
Yeah, I mean, I'll make a motion, whether it gets a second or not, it's another issue. But I quite frankly think, given the discussion we've had today, I think what I'd like to suggest is that we do as Mr. Cunningham has suggested, with the idea in mind of moving the start date. That my idea in mind, of course, would be to moving the start date even further past the March 1st deadline, whatever you come back to us with. And with a series of options, and we can pick and choose from that. Not included in that motion today at all is anything about the vessel monitoring program, gear restriction, depth restriction, trawl prohibition, or anything that we've talked about in the department's options. Give us more time at this point to come back. That's all I'm suggesting today, and that would be my motion.
I can go along with that, but I mean, if we're going to cut the season back and change it anyway, when we do that, I'd like to see it changed to where they got the best part of the season to fish in. I mean, the reason that the late part of the season is better for them because the water is always flatter that time of year. And so when we make that final determination, I want to make it the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's what we ultimately end up doing.
We don't want to prejudice a further decision we make. We may look at this. They may look at this. They may look at the economics of all of this, and all of this could change in the next 3 to 4 months. I mean, we don't want to prejudice any further decision we might end up making based on new information that we don't have yet. So we need to be real careful there. So,
Mr. President, if I might, as an additional discussion item on this.
Have to do it all over again.
Say that again, Bill.
Mr. Flores and Mr. Chrisman, may I suggest that if we adopt, just as I understand Mr. Chrisman's motion, option 7 with the current time and a direction to the staff to come back with an additional amendment to that very provision to again extend the time even further into the future with a several optional dates, whatever you wish to pick, would you also like us at that time, which I think is going to be a late February special meeting, to also bring back to you all of the other language that's currently still there, still in the noticed package, because it is possible that at that time you will also be told that an observer program will not be fiscally possible. And at that time, do you want the option of then saying, well, the additional time is not going to buy us anything? And we could do the same thing.
Physically possible on their side?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And then at that point in time, if you decide to do nothing other at the end of February, but to extend the closure until 1 July, on 1 July we would again bring back the whole package plus anything else you had as far as observer programs that you wish to have to consider as well.
Put the rope in there. Okay. That's fine.
That's what I said, I think, right?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Nielsen, do you have questions?
Yeah, so I don't get killed when I walk out of this room. What is the reasoning, and that's not argumentative, it's an inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
What is the reason for reducing the season by half or whatever it was? I don't know, 2 months, 3 months?
No, you're already on it. You're already on a reduced season as it is. We're going to...
9 months, right.
We're just going to go... We're gonna, take up the consideration of moving the season back to the latter part of the season, okay?
Okay.
It gives us time to, for you to develop
right.
your plan for the observer program and the new study.
All right, I misunderstood
the point, that. Nelson, the point is we're not willing to open the season up this year until all of the rest of these issues are worked out.
I understand
that's
that.
That's the reason we moved it back.
I understand that. I'm not referring to the moving it back. I thought I heard someone say... That
well,
the season
we
will be reduced
by 6 months, but that's
that's no longer.
We'll come back, and it might be one of the options.
All right. And one last thing: if LB could send to my office the name of the senior statistician that worked on the report,
sure.
and his or her title,
sure.
et cetera.
Right now, actually, it's on the report.
Oh, is it? Is that Giebel?
Yeah. Right.
I'd like his resume.
Okay. Thank you.
Agreed.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, everybody that testified.
That brings us to the consent calendar, items 8 through 13. Mr. Weakland would like to comment on items 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
You better not hand me an abalone.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I'd like to again adamantly oppose mandatory requirement observers on the vessels. I'd like to again adamantly deny the access to our state vessels by federal observers. This is a state's rights issue. We've already heard that we see the convoluted manner in which this is being devised, and if there's not an observer standing ready to go, you're not going to be able to fish. This needs to be addressed. We believe that the individuals that are being considered for observer positions be skilled to a proficient level. It is seen in the past that we have observers that don't even know the species of fish that occur in that area and unable to identify them. We would like to have observers with no criminal history. We would like to know the medical conditions of the observers, i.e., any heart conditions, if they have communicable diseases like tuberculosis, hepatitis C, or AIDS. Boats are a close confined area. These things need to be addressed. We would also like to have no observers with outstanding tax bills, child support problems, or student loans outstanding. We would also like to have observers that are worthy of the position, and perhaps drug testing should be a part so that we'll be guaranteed high-quality individuals. We also would like these observers not to have ever been associated with any environmental groups like the Sierra Club, Ocean Conservancy, et cetera, because of their bias in their observations that have already been committed and are a matter of record. Thank you.
You might as well stay up there, Paul, and comment on the rest of them, right? One right after the other, please.
Let's see. Which one is number 9? Oh, I have some real interesting questions about number 9. I went to the Fish and Game Code, and nowhere in there, or the Title 14 that is associated in the back of the Fish and Game Code, are any of these sections in the code. They are left out. Your 2002 Fish and Game Code does not have sections 150.6 or any of the rest of these that are dictated here on the agenda. So here we have a lack of communication once again. It seems like a misrepresenting of the facts. We are not even able to go and find out what these sections mean, even though they're on the agenda. They are not in the Fish and Game Code. And I would like to know exactly what they are meaning by the second phase of the nearshore fishery. Does this mean that the abalone management plan has not been produced? We were supposed to get a copy at our last meeting. We did not get a management plan after 5 years of promising. Now, we have heard President Bush say on several occasions that as Americans, we should never accept denial, deception, deceit, or delay. I submit that that is all we have gotten from the Marine Division on the abalone question. There are also, in the Blue Book of your resources, it talks about recognizing that the practical level of knowledge and understanding of the fishery, as knowledge increases, management can be less precautionary. These are statements in your own resource book. They don't seem to be working. The department is mandated by the Marine Life Protection Act to work with the public, but continually the public's comments and concerns are never answered. I'd like to bring up the fact on the abalone issue that I have had questions that have been asked of the department for going on 6 years now. No answers have come. I have a letter here. I will submit it again that discusses from the department. Right here it says that questions on the abalone issue have never been answered and still have not been answered. I would like to know, where is this abalone management and recovery plan? Your people have let us down again. We have certain dates that are supposed to be written in stone, but as we see that you make conditions and standards and requirements for the public, dates for public comment are etched in stone, yet the department, whenever they come to you and want more time, we've only had 6 years, you know, it's going on 7 years. We were promised a pink management plan for abalones in 1999. Never happened. Oh, now it's superseded by statute. But we're not going to tell you exactly what our plans are, even though it's mandated in the Marine Life Protection Act. The request of more different exotic species being brought into California on number 10. Well, I'm pretty much I have the literature right here about aquatic organism diseases, pathologies of shellfish, on and on. Part of the reason that the abalone question hasn't been answered is because of the disease that was introduced by the Department of Fish and Game, withering syndrome, and exotic pests like the cibellid worm. These questions have never been answered. Although you've had a pathologist on the investigative part since 1993, Carolyn Friedman, who has recently just dropped and run. She's cut and run. What's that all about? The Disease Control Committee, we ask over and over, where is this committee? When does it meet? And how is it that we are never allowed to be part of it? There are no commercial fishermen or any kind of commercial industry except for aquaculture. Aquaculture. Yet we have already seen that the troubles and problems that aquaculture has brought upon us. We now realize that there's a mechanism in nature that when too much genetic diversity is present, it stops or negates all spawning. Oh, we just want to overlook that. We can't make any money with that assumption. Oh, but it's proven as fact. But, oh, no. We don't want to believe any of that. No. Don't want to address it. And the other thing is these grants. My God, we understand that it has to be crisis management because as soon as you declare something a crisis, the grant door swings open and now somebody's pockets are getting full. These things need to be stopped. If you want to put a moratorium on anything, you want to shut anything down, shut down these grant-sucking parasites. This over-heavy burden University of California system that spends billions on these research facilities, yet no worth or value has come out of it. Where are we at?
We're about done, I hope.
Yeah.
Well, on and on and on. Here, the Department of Fish and Game, the state of California, has for years and years asked by their constituents, by the peoples of California, to produce an environmental impact report on abalone so that all the questions can be asked and then answered. But no, the state will not do that, even though it was mandated to them, and they've coerced their responsibilities out of producing such a document because they have liability questions. And we're just going to keep pushing stuff off. And we know we've set a final ending date and a finish line.
But as soon as the racers get near that finish line, we extend it farther to the future. This is not public trust, public confidence. This is deteriorating it. That is our problem here. I would like to know more about the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. Where is it? We've been made many promises over the years, and all we have gotten is denial, deception, and delay. Mr. President, I've asked you before to have the questions of the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan explained, and yet nothing has been done. You conceal and mislead the public on the true nature of the situation and condition of our resource. When will the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan be produced? Where is it? Why is it not here?
We told you in Monterey that the department will have it to the commission by the end of the year.
That sure gives the public a lot of confidence in knowing exactly when it's going to be, because the public only has 45 days from the time it's turned in. But we don't even know when that's going to be. Thank you. And how are we going to access
it? Mr. Weakland, you're finished. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas.
So is public confidence and trust of your body because of how
this Mr. Weakland, you're finished.
Oh,
Mr. Weakland, you're finished.
One last thing. Happy holidays, gentlemen.